Good evening. Welcome to the regular meeting of Cranbrook Community Service District for Thursday, June the 22nd. We got to start with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Secretary, all members are present. Do we have a closed session report? Art.
At the last regularly scheduled meeting, the board met in closed session to discuss matters of litigation and matters of real property negotiations. No final actions were taken that required reporting at this meeting.
Agenda review?
I have some items.
Okay.
To pull item on the consent agenda, 6D.
D as in dog?
D as in dog.
All right.
M as in mom.
All right.
N as in Nancy.
All right.
And then on the regular business agenda, item 8C, I made an administrative mistake when I described that the build-out reduction.
We'll do our acknowledgments, presentations. Sheriff tonight? Not present, okay. North Cross Swap, you're next.
This is their quarterly report that we made a commitment to have North Cross Swap make. So Joellen Butler, their executive director, is here.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. Just to let you know what we've been doing over the last 3 months, we have decided to change the name of our organization. We will no longer be called North Coast Swap. We'll be called Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. And we voted to do that at our June 8th meeting because we feel that it reflects what we do and better than North Coast Swap and connects us more with the ranch that we are there to protect. We've created a new logo, and we have legal help to do this name change. We've been doing our conservation easement monitoring. We're late this year, but it's completed now, and we're compiling it, and the report will be out on July 1st. The cell tower, there are two documents that need to be signed before it can go to the plan, can go to the Planning Commission, County Planning Commission. And after that, it'll be approximately 60 days before it's on the agenda. And they don't expect to start construction until the beginning of 2007, maybe the end of 2006. I just wanted to announce our ranch work days. They're the third Saturday of each month, although we're going to be calling a bunch of extra ones in the next few weeks because the radish is blooming and going to seed along the bluff trail, and we're going to need a lot of extra work in order to get that taken care of so it doesn't come up as big next year. And then,
where do you assemble usually, or is there any particular spot?
Well, for the next few times, we're going to be meeting at the north end of the Bluff Trail and working from there. You can call me at 927-2856 and get more information, and I send out an email to everybody on the ranch hands, Friends of the Ranch Land and North Coast Swap lists to volunteer. But if you'd like to be on that list, I'd be glad to send an email to you, too. And July 16th at 10:30 a.m., it's called The Role of Raptors, and it's with a woman named Kara Hagedorn and her red-tailed hawk, Sunshine. Sunshine was wounded when it was very young and has never been able to be released into the wild, and so she has permission to use it to do educational talks with. And then I just wanted to report that our second annual wildflower show was held here at the Vets Hall on April 22nd and 23rd, and we had more than twice the attendees that we had last year, and it was a good show. It was enjoyed by everybody, and thank you for letting us use this building to do that. We're going forward with plans for the show again in April of next year. And then I just want to announce our kitchen tour. It's our biggest fundraiser of the year, and it's on July 29th from 11 to 1. There are 8 houses on the kitchen tour, and 11 to 3. Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. yeah. And it's our major fundraiser, and we hope you'll all come out for it. We've got some great kitchens this year. Are there any questions or anything I haven't covered?
Don't you think that Sunshine is a rather weak name for a raptor?
I don't know.
The rodents would be, you know, they wouldn't be too scared by a hawk named Sunshine, would they?
That's why it can't be released into the wild.
So just to recap, do you want to leave your phone number for people to find out what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Again? It's 927-2856.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any more questions? Thank you.
President Childcott, is this the first public meeting where our district council is beard-free? Is this the first one?
Is that who it is?
This is the first board meeting.
Yeah. I did see him this morning. He looks pretty well the same as this morning, so, yeah. All right. Are we now ready for the general manager's report?
Yes, thank you. Just a reminder to those in the audience that the district offices and field utility operations will be closed on July 4th. That's a Tuesday this year, in observance of Independence Day. For emergency services events for the summer months, as we have in the past. A couple of people have inquired about that at the district offices, so I wanted to make sure that I reported on that this month. For Parks and Recreation, I just want to make sure that the public is aware that there is a concert in the park scheduled for this Sunday. That's June 25th from 2 to 4 p.m. at Shamel Park. We are picking up and ensuring that this occurs. It's going to feature the Mighty Croon Dogs. It's free to the public. And I want to express my appreciation to Monique Madrid for picking this up and taking on this task to coordinate it at the last moment. And the district provides the annual funding of $5,000 for these concerts. This is just one of them. There will also be some support from the properties and facilities staff for cleanup detail after the concert. Supervisor Shirley Bianchi provided waiver of the park fees for that day, and then Mission Country Disposal also agreed to pick up the extra trash at no charge, since it is something that the district sponsors. So again, this Sunday, June 25th, free concert in the park from 2 to 4 p.m. featuring the Mighty Croon Dogs. We do have a current recruitment going on. We extended the wastewater treatment operator until July 3rd, so if anybody wants any further details, they can contact Monique Madrid at the district offices, 927-6223. Also, information is available on our website at cambriacsd.org. And last, I added to the staff report after the fact that we had the scoping meeting for the environmental impact review process for the Fiscalini Ranch Master Development Plan. It occurred a couple nights ago on June 20th here at Vets Hall. There were about 40 people who attended. We got some comments at the podium from about a dozen people. And then they were encouraged to submit written comments as they felt appropriate within the next couple of weeks to Connie Davidson at the district. And then I provided what we looked to as the continued process for that project. And I wanted to introduce Michael Thompson. He's our chairperson for the PROS Commission, and he will report on behalf of their activities this month.
Thank you, Tammy. President Chaldicott, directors, good evening. Just wanted to discuss with you just several of the items that the commission is dealing with at this point. Firstly, we did at our last meeting review the budget for recreation and parks with Tammy, and the commission voted to support that budget along with the inclusion of the concerts in the parks And we did participate. I was heartened by the number of very positive comments from the community members that were here, perhaps not all really relative to EIR issues, but they were very supportive for the most part, and we were pleased to see that. And there was pretty much a consensus that children at play is not constitute a noise issue relative to EIR. I mean, we were very much supportive of having the park in that area. Additionally, we have a lap pool ad hoc committee led by Steve Figler, and we've received some good news. Steve, in discussions with the county, has gotten the county to agree to open up Shamel Park in the morning and in the afternoon for our lap swimmers. That's been those folks have previously swum at the Cambria Pines Lodge, and now we'll have an opportunity to swim at Shamel Park during the summer. And we're still working on issues relative to how they can do that for the rest of the year. But for right now, for the near term, it's a very, very good development. And then finally, we have formed an ad hoc committee that is working to see how we can move the Center Street Pocket Park forward and expedite that process and getting it open. We think that that's, from the standpoint of an issue that we can really impact at our level, that we'd like to get that moving forward. And we had a presentation from Green Space and their Creekside project, and we feel that that the Pocket Park and the Creekside project are two programs that that would be very complementary to each other, and we'd like to spend our energies in trying to work through the process to get that that program done. And if there's no questions, I thank you very much for your time.
Any questions for Michael? Okay, thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
May I make one clarification? When I mentioned the wastewater treatment operator recruitment, I stated the date of July 3rd. That was incorrect. It's July 13th. That's the extension deadline for anyone interested in applying for the position. Thanks.
Okay. Are you ready?
Well, yes. Thank you, Mr. President. I do have one overhead, so I'm going to stand up and give this to Carlos to put on the overhead. Up the draft review document that we hope to still circulate this summer. That will incorporate the build-out reduction plan that you're going to hear from the Citizens Committee later today. So that's part of that effort. It's work in progress. Moving on to the, and I'll be glad to stop at any point you have a question on one of these, but moving on to the Pine Knolls tank replacement, PG&E has completed relocating the 12,000 volt power lines along the perimeter of the property. So that's out of the way. We still have to work with Charter Cable. They still have their cable TV cable hanging from the existing power poles that are still in the way. So we expect that work to occur next week sometime. We're still negotiating with the contractor on the change order due to the magnitude of those changes, so that work is still ongoing. Excuse me. Moving on to the desalination project, there we have two parallel coastal development permits in progress. We have the one that goes directly to the Coastal Commission, and that was submitted. However, there's more backup required on that particular one. Then we have the one that went directly to the county, and there was a hearing this morning with the County Planning Commission, and they approved our permit for that particular work, subject to the conditions that they have developed. So that was good news. So I thought that was a positive development during that hearing. Again, we're still doing quite a bit on permitting. We have to have everything in place in order to really go forward with the Coastal Commission permit. And the reason there's two permits, it's a jurisdictional area. They use the mean high tide line as kind of the boundary. So if you're below that elevation, you deal directly with the Coastal Commission. If you're above that elevation, you go directly to the county. So we're in both areas, so we're covering it with two different permit applications. Unfortunately, we also learned that we didn't get any Prop 50 state funding for the desal project this last week, so we were disappointed in that. There's just some very tough competition. The funds they had left this last go-round were $21 million total, and they had $56 million in requests to deal with. And you know, just checked with them, and some of the projects that beat us out were a little further along in the permitting process. But, and maybe you can help me scroll it up as we go, but the first step is securing the design services, and that is defining the scope of work, getting a request for proposal out there, as well as the responses from the engineering profession, selecting the design consultant, negotiating a contract, and I put down that we're going to prefer to design both the tank project and the pump station that pumps up to that tank together, at least through a preliminary level of design, because the two go hand in hand in the design. And then as we get past preliminary design, we may split that into two different bid documents, one for the tank and one for the pump station. And when I say the Zone 2 pump station, the name of that kind of jumps around in my head a little bit. I think operations may call it the Rodeo Grounds pump station or booster pump station, but it's basically the one that's at the existing water yard off of Rodeo Grounds Road that needs to be replaced. It's very old, and the equipment is essentially worn out, and it should be replaced with a new lift station, and that should be designed along with the tank project. The environmental clearance process, we would assume lead agency status as we normally do. We would begin that process after we get the preliminary design far enough along to provide a definition of the project. And then that would include some of the key tasks under that. There would be visual impact analyses showing what the facilities would look like. There would be field-level environmental studies and assessments, checking for any listed species and so forth. There would be some public outreach and meetings with the neighbors. We would prefer to reference by that time, the program-level EIR and the Water Master Plan, assuming that gets adopted. There would also be an initial study that's done to determine what level of environmental analysis is required. There would be some development of mitigation measures, depending on what's found out. The draft document gets circulated for the State Clearinghouse and the public review. It'd be the typical CEQA type hearing, and then adopt the environmental findings. So that's kind of a brief summary of the environmental clearance process. Under permitting, we'd have where you have to work out in the street. There could be other permits related to power poles and so forth as well. Another key task that could happen on this project is property rights acquisition, depending on whether the facility, particularly a larger tank, would fit on the existing site, or if we'd have to look for a different site or expand the site somehow. If that happened, we'd have to hire an appraiser and get an appraisal done on the property that was required. We should hire a separate independent right-of-way agent to do the negotiations. There'd be title report research, as well as negotiations. And I included with that summary also the coordination with the future community park, because the pump station that's at the water yard would be moved further away from the creek, but somewhere fitted into the community park preliminary layouts. And then there would be a bidding stage. Again, that'd be following acquisition of completion of all the permits on the project and all the property rights matters before you'd bid that. And then the bidding strategy, as I mentioned earlier, would be probably a separate one for the tank and a separate bid package for the pump station. And finally, what I consider the fun part is the construction. I like to build them. So that pretty much summarizes the key steps to the Stewart Street project that's still outstanding. It's on our list to do. So I'd be glad to answer any questions at this point.
Mr. President, yeah. Bob, is my microphone on? I guess it is. Bob, going back up to the top of the list, you have to develop an RFP so we can get proposals in for engineering work. Do you need to bring that RFP to the board, or can you do that on your own?
I think it's at your preference. We could, I think Tammy and I could handle it at our level and get that out, and unless there was a specific desire on the board's part to be involved in that process.
I would suggest that we let Bob know that it's okay to go ahead and get the RFP out on the street as soon as you can so that we can get the consulting engineer on board and get this project underway.
Okay.
Could I just this may be a somewhat speculative, but just off
process. I think property rights issues can easily add a year or 2 years to a project, depending on what you encounter. So, assuming there would be no property issues, I would say probably 3 years would be a safe assumption in my judgment. I would add at least a year to that if there were some property rights issues that come up. So that's off the top of my head. Of course, we could do a much more detailed schedule for all those tasks and line that out next time, and I'd feel a little more comfortable answering your question, but that's off the top of my head.
That would assume both, Coastal Commission review and...
Well, I would assume that would be at least get through the Planning Commission, and assuming it doesn't get appealed all the way through to the Coastal Commission for some reason, that could add, 6 months to the process, mm-hmm. or more, conceivably, depending on how bitter the appeal process could be. But usually, if it gets appealed, you could add at least 3 months to get onto the Coastal Commission calendar, and there could be another month or two after that to work your way through whatever issues the Coastal Commission staff might find as well.
Mr. President, just a comment. In terms of priorities, I think that because of the high fire danger, this project has got to be at or near the top of the list. We're going to go, if it's a three-year period, we're going to go through a couple of more fire seasons without the extra water storage that we need. So I would suggest that we get this process underway as soon as possible.
Just back to where you're talking about the pump station, which the design would be part of this project, but would that mean that we wouldn't be moving, maybe the question's for Brian as well, wouldn't be moving the yard across the road up the hill a ways there before this project gets started, or where would that fit in?
I believe we're planning on moving the at least the pump station portion of the yard out in towards the where the community park is being planned, mm-hmm. and try to fit that into the community park layout. Right. And that's not that big of a building, but you do have to allow room for the use of a pump station out there is still allowable.
Is that and that particular piece of property part of that designation change? Okay, sorry.
So that could get involved, or maybe it's already conditioned in to be mm-hmm. an allowable use, but that's mm-hmm. that would be a key question mm-hmm. that has to be resolved on the mm-hmm. pump station.
Okay.
The pump
All
station
right.
itself should not be that difficult of a construction project. It's a fairly small building. There's power you have to get to it. There's some access issues you have to consider in how the roads get laid out to it.
Okay.
But
I was just concerned whether we're going to have to wait. The move would be delayed because design process hadn't gotten started or underway.
The design process yeah. for the community park or the design
well,
process
the pump station, you're mm-hmm. putting that in. You said you're going to do the two parts and the one. That's all. Just mm-hmm. what effect might it have? I have a second question, and that's I always ask this question about the master plan EIR. When do you think it's going to be done?
That's with Glenn LaJoy and I are working our best at it. It's
Is
carving
some
out the time.
Special thing holding it up, or
just essentially it's workload and other projects. Mm-hmm. Some of the negotiations have taken a little longer on the Pine Knolls tank than I thought they would. Some of the permitting issues get rather involved on some of the other projects. We just got through this hearing, so that took a bit of my time in the last several weeks.
That's the thing. The last thing we need to do before we go forward for a permit, is that right, to the Coastal Commission? Or?
I'm sorry.
Once the EIR is done, what's our next step on the master plan, the water master plan?
Well, that would conclude with a hearing on that process. So we would complete a draft EIR, mm-hmm. get that out to the public for review, probably be a 30, but most likely a 45-day public review period. Mm-hmm. Then you would receive any written comments there are to that EIR, mm-hmm. and then hold your hearing where you could also receive more verbal mm-hmm. comments to it. After that, you would package together the response to comments mm-hmm. and have a final document. But there would be an adoption at that CEQA hearing, depending on your findings and the testimony received that you'd make at that point.
We just approve it or accept it. Is that as far as it needs to go for approval? So could it be done by the end of the year?
We're going to try our best.
Okay. Thanks. And thank you.
Okay.
Any more questions for Bob?
No. Thanks,
Bob, very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Brian?
Okay. Yes. Getting Carlos to fire it up. A little closer here. First of all, I'll just comment on the status of available water. As Tammy told you earlier, Both creeks, this is Santa Rosa Creek right here, and a lovely lady here has got it made. She's sitting there painting in the early morning, watching the creek and the ocean. What more could you want? But that's quite a lot of water. This is on June 22nd. This is for June 22nd. This is actually June 16th when it was taken, and that's quite a bit of water going to the ocean. And it's the most I've ever seen going to the ocean this time of year. So Stan Simeon's doing as well. There's plenty of water going there now, and our forecast is that we'll have plenty of water at least till December. So we'd still like everybody to conserve. We've got a couple other issues. One of them I'd like to point out has to do with the Pine Knolls tanks, and we've got a logistics problem when we go to move the tank. We've got 210,000-gallon tanks there, and one of them we have to move. And during that process, we're going to only have one tank. And all the water in Cambria goes through that tank to all the other tanks. I mean, that's the heart of the system. And it's really critical in the morning, about 10 o'clock to noon, when everybody's using the water. And that's going to be the tough time. And we just really like to caution everybody to really control the water during that time. Don't water your yard. Water it at night if you need to. And if you can hold it off, please do. I don't know exactly when that's going to happen because of the negotiation going on with the with a contractor, but it could, as soon as it goes, that's going to be the first thing to go. That's what we're going to do. So it could happen before the next meeting. I hope it does, but if it doesn't, I'll be back the next meeting to tell you the same thing. But just keep your ears open, and when that happens, we're going to try to let everybody know to really hold back on their water, because we're going to need it for fire, and there's not going to be very much in that tank in the morning and during the noontime hours.
How will we let people know, Brian?
Well, we're going to have to let people know over the press and the radio and any way we can, because it's going to be a crucial time, that time, and they're going to have to watch their fires and their matches and everything else. I mean, this is going to be a tough time. Same thing on San Simeon there. Santa Rosa's high as well. We're doing good there. I put this one in here. This is our radio tower we put in that was toppled. I wish I had a laser. Oh, I do have a laser. Let's see if I can put it on here. The original tower is in the same spot, and it's hard to see here, but there's a waveguide that goes up in here, and that was the dimension of the original tower. This tower is twice as wide as the other one. It's a commercial tower. And the other tower went up to about right here, and it was in, I think, 8-foot sections, 8 or 10. This tower comes in 20-foot sections, and there's three of them. And you can see there's a man up here putting the cross arm on the top. It's a little bit taller, and we wanted that because of this tank right here. When people are on it, they're in the, they're, we'd have to shut the tower down for people to get back up on there. And every one of these elements that's on there is emergency services. There's sheriff, there's fire department, CCSD, KCBX, and we don't want to shut that down. This is an emergency tower, and that's what it's for. A few people called. Somebody thought it was a cell site. We were going to be a cell tower in here, and we reassured them that cell tower is never going to go in this site. One of the things that we do not want is a cell tower in here because it will interfere with the emergency service stuff, and it'll just step on everything we have, and we don't even want them close to us. So that won't happen. And county also wants us to come back and get our permits and papers back after the fact, even though it was done during an emergency. And so we're doing that. We're working with them on that. So I just wanted to bring that up. Get back to well operations. Just a comment on that. We plan our operations to run the wells this year. Usually we'd have Santa Rosa on by now, but we're going to let Santa Rosa go as long as it can until the bar closes and before we use any of Santa Rosa water. And San Simeon's still going, so we're not too worried about it. And that seems like a good way to go, especially for the fish and stuff in San Simeon and Santa Rosa. The solids dewatering, we're still collecting parts and getting ready to work on that. That was with storm damage on that. We've been working on the computer networking. We've got the radio point-to-points are out and the T1s are in. They've been hooked up for a while and they're working great. The fire department's pretty happy now. We don't have daily problems with disconnects, and it's so we decided to actually get a new server for the office and maybe try to use the old server for the server for the records management system, and that way we'll have a backup for the district server. And on records management, Kathy Choate and I have been working on that for a couple of years, and we finally came to a conclusion after looking at a lot of different software and a lot of different systems and talking to a lot of different people that we were going to go with Laserfish. It's a great system, and before too long, all of our records will be scanned and indexed, and it'll be a lot easier to find them. We won't have to go through boxes or try to wonder where the boxes are. And I'm really happy that that's going in. And that concludes my report.
Brian, so is that budgeted now that you've decided what you want? Are we ready to get it?
It's budgeted for this year.
Oh, so. I mean,
this is part of this year's budget.
Great.
Any more questions for Brian? I just think that, with the shutdown of the one tank, we should be able to get the news to the media and give people a real sensible schedule to follow, which is easy. And I think that people in Cambria will cooperate.
I agree, but we'll know better when we get a schedule of actually when they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian, very much.
How long will it be shut down?
Well, we're looking right now. The last theory they had on exactly how long it would take, about a week. And it could go longer if something goes wrong, but I don't think it'll take longer than that. It should take about a week, 5 days to a week.
And how long does it take? I mean, and then you refill the other tank?
Well, one tank's going to stay exactly where it is, and it'll stay in operation. One tank's going to be dewatered, and it will be have some work done on it so it can be actually braced and lifted up and moved to the other site right next to the existing tank that's going to stay. And once it's placed next to the other tank, it'll have to have some fittings welded to it, connected to the system, and then it'll have to be disinfected and refilled with water. And it'll take a few days to do that.
Thank you, Brian.
Okay.
Fire Chief.
Good evening. You have my report in front of you. I will highlight a couple of things of interest. Probably the most important thing that I have in my report is that we have started under Assistant Chief Miller's direction and training, accompanying customers and employees alike are safe inside those stores. So that's really the focus. I wanted to bring to everybody's attention that we're rapidly approaching July. On the 14th is the last day to clear their lots. In the meantime, I know a lot of people are happy to see their neighbors clearing their lots, and they're doing nothing for their own property with their home and their garage on it. We ask that they strongly consider making sure that they have adequate defensible space. It doesn't take much to look at the news around us to see inland that there have been quite a few fires that have started out early and burned significant acreage. The one in New Kayama obviously comes to mind. We've had a lot of rain. We've had multiple growth levels of grass, so the fire potential is there. To that end, today on the back table, I put up some brochures on basically making your home fire safe and firewise. And also the publication that comes out every year in the newspaper, Living with Fire. And there's a great diagram in here, a diorama, that shows really how you should affect what we call a defensible space around your home, your garage, your business, so that basically a fire can burn through and not immediately catch your building on fire. So those are back there as well. We are obviously focusing on wildland training this time of year. And Carlos, if you can put that slide up real quick here. So our focus this time of year is basically training we do to fight wildland fires. We can't often drive our equipment out to put them out. We have to drag the hose lines and attach them and go on out to attack the fire. This is hand line construction, a way to basically remove the fuel in front of the fire. Very difficult to do that if people haven't done lot clearance and they haven't done defensible space around their home. We have to remove a lot of debris, and often there's not the time. Oops. This is shelter training. This is what we train our people to crawl in case the fire is going to run over them. It's the last option. You don't want to be in that. If you've ever wrapped a turkey up for Thanksgiving, put aluminum foil around it and stuck it in the oven, that's basically us when you get in one of those things with 1,200 to 2,500 degrees blowing by that may last a couple seconds or maybe as long as 20 minutes. So the blue ones are practice ones, but we practice that skill as well. This is picking up a hose after their fire. And that's one of the fires we had near Strawberry Canyon. Again, the grass is drying out pretty well. Some of the understory, the brush and the trees are beginning preparedness coordinators. They have effectively stopped about 15 years ago recommending that any city, county, or town have water or food storage for its population. They have found dollar for dollar it's much more efficient to put on a public education program to really push citizens to have their own home disaster cash and preparedness. And I think this is real timely to bring this up because, as most of you know, there's a concern about a pandemic flu that may come in. We happen to be in the Pacific Flyway where the ducks and geese, the migratory fowl that typically come out of Alaska, may catch this pandemic flu they're worried about, like the avian flu, the N5N1, which if it breaches over to the human population, basically what the federal government would do is they would tell all citizens to not congregate. They would say, stay at home, stay away from work, don't go to busy areas, which means you wouldn't want to go to the store where you could be exposed to this. So now is a good time to be prepared not only for a tsunami, a fire, or a flood, but some of these pandemic diseases that are in other countries and are rapidly coming in our direction. So I wanted to report back and give you that matter. The only thing that I could find that cities had, the city of Napa, for example, where I came from, had a container of food and water for the employees so that you could bring them into work and not have to try to find them food so they could go out and care for the citizens. But other than that, even some of the most disaster-ready cities in the nation don't have caches of food for the populace. So. With that, I'd be glad to answer any other questions that you may have, and that's the end of my report.
Yes, sir. Mr. President, two things. Chief, thank you for following up on that. I really appreciate it. Perhaps you could author an article for the CCSD newsletter that would advise people on what they ought to have on hand to be prepared and the kind of containers and so forth. The second issue relates to the defeat of Measure F, which would have provided additional funds for the healthcare district to support the paramedic service. What can the district do on a short-term basis to help provide additional service or backup or whatever, or do you already have plans in place that help supplement the paramedic service that the healthcare district provides. Can you educate us on that?
Absolutely. First thing on your first item, call where they have a paramedic and they need an EMT, one of our firefighters, or where they have an EMT and they need a paramedic and we have one to free up. We free that person up. They become a fire department resource that goes to that ambulance and responds to the call with the idea of solving the emergency that's at hand. So that's ongoing. The second thing that we've been working on for about 4 years is I currently have two full-time staff members that are state-certified and national registry paramedics. Because we're not a paramedic provider, they cannot provide paramedic service on the engine. We are rapidly working on an agreement that would allow those my fire captain and fire engineer that we have to offer paramedic services if the ambulance was delayed or if there were no paramedics there and it was a life-threatening situation. I believe that will enhance the situation. In the meantime, we met after the defeat of Measure F with the Cambria Community Healthcare District manager and talked about ways that we could work together. One of the cautions I made to him and one of the things that I think is important is emergency medical services are pretty much the backbone of the service we provide to this community, to the majority of the calls. But we're rapidly entering a fire season, which as it gets later on could be pretty dangerous for us. So there are times, and I've given the captains the latitude to deny giving them that second person. For one example, the fire stations around us are stripped because there's a fire inland and we're the only engine within maybe 30 minutes. And then we have to depend on our reserves coming back. So there's times when we can't be available for them just because we don't have the fire backup that we need as well. But we're doing everything we can to make sure the citizens don't lack for a secondary ambulance or a delay in medical treatment.
Sure. It just seems to me that in the short term anyway, the quicker that we can get the two paramedics that we have in our fire department in a position where they can render full paramedic service, the better off the community is going to be. And I would suggest that the board, perhaps by consensus here, let the chief know that that ought to be a high priority. It's life and death, if you will, and I think that we ought to get that agreement together as soon as possible.
I couldn't agree more. It's been on the top of my priority for the last 3 years. It's actually exciting to see it come to fruition and come about.
It's in process already, isn't it? We have a draft.
It is.
That the ad hoc committee.
The plan is to bring it back next month for you all to
approve. I do think the chief cautioned us that if there is a first.
Sounds familiar. No, it's a shared. This is community property state.
I talk big when my wife's not around.
One of the items is on tonight's agenda is the budget, so I won't get into the budget discussion at all. Just a comment to make, and that is when we come back to the board in January, by that time we'll have the Black and Beach study and some of our revenues all put together. At that point also, our goal is to actually bring forth a capital improvement with the associated revenues going with the projects, because I think that's something we really need to look at and focus on. And then the last thing I just want to comment on, I've given a sort of a thumbnail of our reserve situation. We currently have $9.1 million sitting at LAIF. I've listed some of the projects that the district currently has, and included in that is the liability we have to the state. And you can see that when you add all of that up, our reserve balance is $2.5 million. A point of reference, I did not include any of the Stewart Street and Water Yard Pump project in this. So when that comes online and we get cost estimates on that, that will further reduce our reserve balance. So that is all I have to report on, and I'd be more than happy to take any comments or questions.
Questions for Patrick? Yes.
Maybe we do the budget, but what is the thought of funding the Stewart Street process then?
Well, I mean, at this time, if we were to bring back the fact that we advertised for requests for proposals, mm-hmm. any monies to pay that entity would come out of the reserves. Mm-hmm. So out of that 2.5 that Patrick projects now, and or when we get through the Black and Beach long-term financial management plan, some of these projects might be financed rather than cash-based.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
Patrick, I was wondering, with we're roughly $6 million budget, is that true? I'm based on Are our reserves meant to be so many percent of that in a well-funded organization?
Well, that obviously that's a very sound financial policy to have in place. I didn't mean to interrupt for Patrick, because I'm certain he'll agree with me. And that will be one of the elements that Black & Veatch brings back, and we will actually have a policy in hand for approval.
Okay. Thank you. Any more questions, Patrick?
Thanks.
Okay. I think we'll now go through the consent agenda, and we'll deal with the items that have not been pulled, so we get those out of the way.
Okay. Item 6A is to approve the expenditure county recorder. 6G, to adopt Resolution 30-2006, approving a finance manager position description. 6H, approve the extension of the intent to serve letter for Kestrel Point Senior Care Facility. Michael Clark, applicant, APN 024.191.052. 6I, to appoint Alex F. Magro, MD, to the Emergency Medical Services Citizens Committee. 6J is to adopt Resolution 34-2006, authorizing amendment to Corolla Engineers' contract for the desalination project. 6K is to adopt Resolution 37-2006, placing in nomination Director Greg Sanders as a member of the Association of California Water Agencies, Region 5 representative. And 6L is to cast ballot for Director Joan Coben as the Local Agency Formation Commission, that's LAFCO, alternate special district member.
Can I have a motion, please?
I'll move the consent calendar as read.
I'll second it.
All those in favor signify by aye.
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 Thank you. Now let's go to the first item is item D.
Well, D won't be considered. D, M, and N will not be considered
okay,
today.
Okay, so these are off the agenda.
Yeah, they're off the agenda.
Okay, so we just have item E.
Item E is to adopt Resolution 28-2006, authorizing extension of the professional services agreement with Sergeant Major Associates for federal lobbying services. This is this contract expires in a couple of weeks or within a week, and this is just an extension for the federal lobbying services by Jerry Haleev of Sergeant Major so that we can continue to use their services with regard to mostly the desal plant and the federal funding and appropriations.
Now, this is the federal lobbying services, correct?
Federal, yes.
This is, now, is there a separate contract for the state lobbying services?
Yes.
And when is that going to come before us?
I'm going to look to the district clerk because I believe she told me December 31st of this year.
That's correct.
Is that correct? Okay.
Given the budget constraints, restraints, and the requisite belt tightening that we're going to have to engage, I believe that lobbying services have to be looked at carefully.
Institutional knowledge of the inner workings in Washington, D.C. was very helpful as far as Jerry Haleev is concerned with getting that agreement going and working with the other legislators as well so that we could complement that. Also, the appropriation we have currently before Congress is $2 million, and he continues when he is there in Washington with his other client issues or matters to pump forward the CCSD request to get that funded, along with the staff of Lois Capps.
Well, I understand he talks to people about CCSD, but how do we know when he delivers? For example, you know, with the big boys and girls, you can, you know, it's maybe because they get so much publicity and negative publicity, you can see the results. I mean, I watched a piece on TV the other day on Real Sports, which was one of the best pieces I've seen on that show, about how the coal refining industry spend a lot of money with their lobbyists to undo this law that would cause them to spend a lot of money cleaning up the air. And they were able to even led to Governor Whitman's resignation because they were able to use their influence to reverse the impact of this law. And it was very easy to see where the money went. I mean, institutional knowledge is very nice, but frankly, I just don't see. I mean, the fact that he educates us in institutional knowledge is very nice, but is he the one that's responsible for getting us any of the money? I don't know. He might be. You know, he's personable. He knows a lot of people. That's great. But I'm not sure if we can continue afford to pay a firm $15,000 a month because they have institutional knowledge or because they're very helpful to staff. Is it worth it? Is it worth $5,000, $2,500 a month? I mean,
keeping the pressure on.
Well, we just have the presence rather than either board members going to Washington, D.C. and or staff members.
Mr. President, if I can.
Can I finish what I was going to say?
Are you done?
Oh, no.
Oh, you're not done.
No.
Okay. Fine. Go ahead.
It's night and I'm tired. If you want to push me around, it's fine. I don't. Maybe I'm not making myself clear, given the comments to my colleague on the right. I just want to see something, preferably in writing, where I can look at it and tell my constituents, you know what, he is worth $15,000 a month. Look what he's done. He's talked to Joe Blow, and Joe Blow talked to the committee chairperson. And here we got appropriated or allocated, whatever the right verb is, this amount of money. And he can lay claim to some credit for this kind of money. Let me just tell you something. I feel strong. The problem with the federal contract is I don't know whether he's worth it. So I can't. I'm telling you, I'd like a vote, and I want the public to be aware of this. I don't know whether he's worth it or not on the federal. On the state, given the Prop 50 denial, you know, where was he in the prop? You know, I know Bob says there were a lot of other good projects. Well, that's great. I wonder how many of the other people had lobbyists that are getting paid as much as we're paying our lobbyists. Maybe he's not worth it. So there's no way I will approve the state when that comes up. There's no way I will approve the state because the desal thing is coming federally, not state. So I think that paying him for the state, given the debacle with the Coastal Commission, I lay responsibility on him for that. The Prop 50, I lay responsibility on him. He ain't delivering, period. And I hope he listens to it. I mean, I like him. I've had dinner with him. Real nice guy. We make jokes and everything. But my loyalty is not to the joke maker and to the personable MOT, but it's to my people, my constituents. So he ain't, there's no way, and I'm going to make a stink as loud as I can in the state. On this one, I just don't know. So I would like staff to convey my concern to him and ask him to provide some data other than just talking to you and schmoozing you and saying, yeah, what lobbyists do, yeah, we talk to so-and-so, we talk to so-and-so. And when good things happen, it's not Lois Capps is doing, it's Jerry Haliva's doing. And when bad things happen, it's not Jerry Haliva's doing, it's the government's doing. I'm in the same kind of business, kind of, and it doesn't smell quite right.
That you've highlighted this, and now that we're in open session, we can have the discussion. Director Villeneuve and I have kind of been the governmental relations team for the board for the past several years. And Don and I have been to Washington, D.C. Three times, I think, Don.
Four.
Four times, that's right. Each time Jerry Haliva has been there with us, and so I can give you a firsthand account of what he's done for us. I don't know that it's appropriate to take the time this evening, other than to say that...
Greg, you've told me.
Okay.
You've told me in the past that he's there, he opens doors, that's great.
And in terms of quantifying things, I think that's a good idea. And in fact, perhaps as a part of his contract, we can require that he provide monthly reports to the board. I think that would be a very good idea. But I can assure you of a couple of things. Number one, but for Jerry Haliva's intervention, we would not have had the project cooperation agreement signed. The problem was kind of a perfect storm, if you will, no pun intended. Hurricane Katrina had completely, and again, no pun intended, inundated the Corps of Engineers. A project like this, in comparison with the disaster that happened in New Orleans, puts our project at the very bottom of the list. And I think only because of Jerry's efforts did it get to the top of the list and finally get signed. Having worked on Capitol Hill myself for 3 years, I was an administrative assistant to a congressman. I know that small projects like this don't get the attention that they deserve unless somebody is there to make sure that those who are on the requisite committees and so forth are aware of the project, and Jerry keeps this project in front of them. The proof is in the pudding. We have a $2 million appropriation hanging in the balance, and I think that it's up to Jerry Haliva to make sure that we get that money. And so we'll have a very bright line report card that we'll be able to use to gauge his effectiveness in just a few months.
I have a feeling if staff relates what I've just said publicly to Mr. Haliva, and followed up with what you've followed up, you know, some kind of reports, monthly, whatever they are, so we can measure what he's doing, I have a feeling that will enhance his effectiveness in getting us money. Don't you think, Mr. Sanders?
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
It's kind of a no-lose situation here.
That's right.
He needs to be aware that we're watching him, and come on, let's start right. Delivering.
I just want to make sure that the community understands that we'd be penny wise and pound foolish if we didn't spend this money on representation in Washington, D.C., because the payback to us is going to be many-fold what we spend in terms of his services. And if it's not, and as we go along, as we're monitoring this, if we detect that it's not going to result in the payback that we expect, then we can do something else.
Well, the next contract is in December, so I'm hoping that by December he'll get wind of at least my concern, and then by hopefully
sure.
Between now and December, because we're going to revisit again on the state level in December.
I think that's fair.
And the ball will be in his court to show us what he's doing.
Absolutely. I think that's very fair.
I have one public comment. Richard Hawley.
I've been waiting for this dialogue to
if you hold just a moment,
give me
Richard.
An opportunity. I was concerned also on the state level. But if you put it into perspective, you look at our engineer gave us a bit of a kind of an aside that if you look at the number of agencies that got that money, and that wasn't that much money. I mean, the pot was pretty minimal for a state this large. Those are, if you look at the list of the successful claimants for this, you just see the same thing over and over again. We're at a table, and we're probably invisible unless we clamor and really get around and make sure that we can at least pick up some of the crumbs. But we're up against agencies in this business, such as the East Bay MUD. In fact, some of the largest municipal agencies in the country are at that table trying to get some of that money as well. Just at some time, when you have some time, maybe you've done this. You said you've looked on the internet. I did it after the just one budget cycle, and that was about 4 years ago. And I couldn't find our list on there. I mean, it's the when you look at that, there's pages and pages and pages of federal money being allocated to different communities, and we're just we're not even a pimple on the behind of an elephant.
Pretty big, Donald.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got to make it. You've got to be there and be in their face. And I'm quite satisfied that he had, in the past, at least he's been delivering for us. I would add, though, that I don't know why we stopped having the board together getting a discussion. We used to do that. We didn't need to have them come down here because we have to pay for that, too. But a conference call was adequate. So I think basically raising that issue is fruitful because we need to be in that loop. And I don't know where that sort of drifted away. But he has delivered. I don't know about the state, but he has sure in the feds.
Okay. Let Mr. Holley.
I guess we could have him on the telephone instead of bringing him down during a board meeting and give us a report. That might work.
Yeah. Mr. Holley, sir.
Okay. Thank you. My name is Richard Holley. I'm a resident of Cambria. I think $7,000 a month or $7,500 a month plus expenses, by the way, is not... it's very significant for our community. It may not be significant for East Bay MUD, which has probably 10 million voters in their district. We have probably 2,000, 3,000 that actually vote here. So I think the money is incredibly badly spent. I'd like to know exactly how much money we've spent on state and federal lobbyists since Mr. Hamilton made this arrangement in 2003. I know we have a nice fence around our well fields in San Simeon. That's the only thing I've seen. I've been to New Orleans and seen what the Army Corps of Engineers builds, how it's failed, how they stonewalled Congress and the American public, saying that they weren't at fault, and now they are. So we've signed an MOU with an organization that wouldn't even know they can build a desal plant. That's beside the point. This money is huge to this community, and looking at our budget and the way we've been spending money lately, I think this board really needs to think seriously about that. And I agree with Mr. Ballou that we should get an itemized account of every meeting this man's been to, how much he's charged, where he eats dinner, lunch, how much he charges for travel. I want to see some itemization here. Thank you.
Bring it back to the board. More discussion?
No, I'd just like to move approval of this agenda item.
A second, please. Go ahead, Don.
Thing to work. Okay, I'll second it.
Okay. All those in favor signify by aye.
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 Any opposed?
Me.
One opposed. Thank you.
Does this mean if I go to Washington, he wouldn't hang with me?
Oh, he'd hang.
Oh, I bet he'll double hang with me.
He might hang you.
All right, we're now into the agenda, and we have the Water and Wastewater Standby Availability Charge.
Okay, thank you. This is the final step in our annual process with regard to confirming the water and wastewater availability standby charges. So we're asking, what we've done today is attach the resolution. We have the itemized report of the water and wastewater standby and availability charges by parcel available. and we ask that you conduct a public hearing and take comments, and then confirm the report and adopt Resolution 32-2006. I did want to mention for the public's benefit at home that this establishes a standby and availability annual charges at $45 for water and $30 for wastewater for most properties, and this is unchanged from all the many years before.
And this appears on your regular rate bill, right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. I open the public hearing at this time. Any members of the public wishing to speak on this matter? In that case, I'll close the public hearing and bring it back for discussion and adoption.
I'll move to adopt Resolution 32-2006, confirming the itemized report describing each parcel and the amount of water and wastewater standby and or availability charges to be assessed against each parcel.
I'll second
it. Was that
yes.
Joan?
Yes.
Joan seconded. Okay. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Also carried. We now have a water bill modification, item 7B.
Okay, this right. is by applicant Mike and Laura McKinney at 1635 Melrose. Staff's recommendation is that the request for modification for their November, December 2005 and their January, February 2006 utility bills for this address be denied. The facts that I give in the discussion section are that their normal average is about 20 units, and this is for the prior 12-month period. The consumption in question is for 39 units for the first bill and 95 units of water for the second bill. The initial inspections in February indicated that there was no evidence of outside leaks. There was a possible problem with the RO unit or the water softener, and could have been that the gardeners may have left the backyard pond running. These were comments that obviously were gathered during the investigation. The customer stated they were going to shut off the RO unit and the softener after the second inspection by our water department on February 15th, and then their consumption goes back to normal. So the subsequent bimonthly billing period for March and April was for 11 units, which shows a significant drop below their average consumption of 20, and we just don't discover that there's any fault on behalf of the CCSD. Of course, we haven't specifically identified the source of the water consumption. That's yet undetermined and unknown, but we did discover that the meter was functioning correctly and accurately registering the consumption. Therefore, we recommend that the water bill modification be denied. This customer was contacted to be here tonight, and I don't know if they are.
Yes, I have
okay.
a...
Okay.
Is there any discussion before we ask the customer to come forward?
All right.
Would you like to come forward? Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Laura McKinney, and I generated the information in front of you. After 40 years in Cambria and following important retrofit and water use from a family of five down to now just three, as soon as we noticed a problem with our bill, we contacted the CCSD, and it came exactly at the same time as the installation of the new meters. And so we thought there was a problem. We had our house inspected by a plumber. There was no problem. We had the outside inspected. There was no problem. If you remember at this time, Cambria was very, very wet. And there was a brief time in January where it was dry. There wasn't much rain. We still found no leaks. The second bill came out quite a bit larger than the first one. We called again and said, there's something wrong with your meter. We were out of town. The water has been turned off since October to the landscaping, and again, because it came upon the same time as the meter, we just figured that when they installed it, there was a problem and they needed to fix it. So they were very gracious. They came out again. They made some recommendations, and we followed up on those recommendations, but both the people that removed the RO unit said it was functioning properly. There was no problem with it. The people that removed the water softener unit said the same thing. And short of turning off our water entirely, we never did find the evidence of the leak. It's, you know, I would say that it's an unknown of what happened. We're not even sure why it changed. So when you have customers that are long-term and have done such a good job at retrofitting, even when they had a larger family for so many years, and have something like this happen, the reason for modifications would be to give relief to good customers, longtime residents who use all the ways possible to save water. We don't wash our cars. In the letters I wrote you, we know how to do this. We've been through three droughts, three moratoriums. We've made a living here in spite of all these water problems. And even in the last drought time, Mike delivered water to community members, bought a water truck, and delivered water, bought it from the district to save all the people who had landscaping, and delivered water during that drought time. So that was a service to the community. This rainy season was so unusual, there's a good chance that this water that we're being charged for ran off the top of the wells anyway. And with such evidence of good water usage for 20 years in the same place, I really ask that you reconsider Ms. Rudock's recommendation that it be denied and that you at least give us some relief on a $1,000 water bill when you've got so much evidence of such good water usage with the family.
Mr. President?
Yes.
Assuming Mrs. McKinney is finished.
Yes, I'm.
Okay. Can you stay right there
sure.
for a minute? I'm sympathetic to this request for one reason. I had a similar circumstance at my house that I fortunately was an eyewitness to. Otherwise, it could have been worse. I absolutely don't mean to criticize the contractor that installed the new meters, but at least at my house, when they attempted to install the new meter, the pipe stripped and they couldn't get the replacement meter on after they had taken the old meter off. So they just kind of wedged the old meter back as best they could. And only because my neighbor informed me did I know that water was pouring out of the meter box and down the street. And it was, some time before I was able to get somebody from the district out to take care of it. And, of course, then they got the contractor to come right over and fix the problem. So I think while my circumstance may have been an isolated incident, I'm sure it happened in other places around town as the meters were being changed out. And if I hadn't been home, the volume of water would have been tremendous. Nobody would have known. If my neighbor hadn't noticed it, nobody would have known. So given that Mrs. McKinney has testified that she did have a plumber go out and the plumber found nothing unusual, and given that the timing of this was coincident with the installation of the new meters, I can understand how there could be a problem.
Is this consistent with our policy?
My recommendation?
Yeah.
Yes. And we did have a couple of others. I was going to respond to Director Sanders, either similar situations to his or different, but that we found that there could have been some fault on the meter installation, and we corrected those accounts without having to bring that to the board. But this is similar to others where we could not determine that. There was no evidence that there was a fault at the meter or with the installation of the new meter.
So for us to approve the applicant's request, it would just be totally, they're good people, they've been here a long time. As Ms. McKinney says, they've adopted water conservation measures over the years. And we have, I suppose, do we have inherent equitable powers to help out good people?
Well, I can suggest to you that these two accounts are both the same, you know, that are here tonight for hearing.
Because the problem is there's like 4,000 good people. I only know about 50 schmucks in this town. So once the word gets out that we're helping two good people, and I'm sure they are, and I know they are.
Their account is up to date, so, you know, and they have paid, yeah. you know, what they needed to keep this up to date while they go through this process.
I mean, there was a leak, and we have no evidence that the leak was in any way attributable to the new meters, do we?
No.
Okay, it's just mere speculation. Okay. Well, all right.
We also have no evidence that no one, not even your district employees who came out twice, fortunately, one of the times it had been dry, and they still found no evidence of water on the outside of the house and all the sprinklers had been turned off anyway. And then the second time, it rained a lot this year, so it would have been probably hard to detect. But we never found any evidence of any leaks in the house or outside ever. So we're really not sure what happened and don't know what went. Why we were just short of turning off our water entirely. If this had happened again, that would have been our only choice. There was nothing left to do.
Mr. President, if I may, the statement was just made that this item and the next item are similar. I beg to differ. I don't want to prejudice the board on consideration of the next item, but the next item very clearly says that there was a leak found. And the leak was on the customer's side of the meter, and it's been our policy to not grant relief when there is a leak on the customer's side of the meter unless there are very extraordinary circumstances. In my situation, incurred when the new meter was installed, I'm pretty confident that had the leak or the improper installation of the meter not been discovered, the contractor would have taken his time to get back to the house. In this case, there was no leak. The customer had a plumber come out and verify that, and I think it's like that legal maxim, res ipsa loquitur, you know? I think we have to assume that it was the meter installation.
Could I ask the question, if it's in here? I've missed it. What about subsequent water bill? It's gone back to
it
your,
went back down,
your normal? It's only a one time?
It happened. When it first happened, it happened the quarter. I think the meter got installed midway through. I think it's just November, December bill, like somewhere early December. Mm-hmm. And then we got a phone call that our average usage was, 15 or 16, and it was up to 39. Mm-hmm. That was only half the month. Mm-hmm. So we called right away and said, there's something wrong with the meter. And then they got there and they looked it over. They couldn't determine anything was wrong. And then, we had everything checked out. Everything was fine. And then 2 months later, we get a bill that's, $1,000. And we called again and said, there's something wrong. We've already taken all the steps. And then they came out again and looked again. So they looked twice. So
the meter functioned for 2 months, and then now it is functioning. I mean,
right. They
came
out
feeling it malfunctioned, and now it's functioning
fine. So seems to be doing fine. The next bill was 11 units, and going from a family of five down to three, being out of town for the holidays with everything turned off, to come back to a water bill like that was stunning.
I can imagine. I don't mean to say, but I've had a similar experience. It wasn't quite of this magnitude, but to be honest, I was away also two weeks out of the month, and I came back. My bill is triple what it usually is, and had the plumber and the Culligan man and all that come out, and the plumber just changed the flapper in one of my toilets, which I never heard it run. I had no sense it was running, nothing, and the meter is now running properly. I mean, I'm back to my normal. So, I don't know, because I thought the same thing. It's the same time the meters were put in, and it probably happened. But it's this silent thing that crept up during that one-month period. But if you haven't made any changes, but you have gone back to your normal usage now without changing anything in your...
Well, we removed the RO and removed the water softener. I had them check all the toilets, and they were fine. They were already retrofitted. So we even had them come out a second time when the second bill was out and, test things, and nothing was wet or running. So we're not, she states that there's no evidence of outside leaks. There was no evidence it's the meter. There's just, we don't know what happened. Nobody knows, seems to know what happened, mm-hmm. which is why we are asking for a modification.
So the leak has, you're back to normal after you replaced the RO unit and the water softener, correct?
Well, we pulled them out, went without them for a while. We put in a new system on one of them already. So.
And now everything's back to normal.
Seems to be back to normal. And it's down to 11 units for a two-month period, which has been a lot more normal. This year being such a rainy year, there was a lot of water this year, so
Hey, by the way, John, if you, don't pay, just appeal. I don't know, I'll give you a break.
It seems like that if you have offer a modification process when someone unusually has a problem, that's what it's for. It seems like it's for
Look, we're all this town's is, you know, I mean, there's some of my colleagues and you're a nice person, I know you're a nice person, but look, there was a leak somewhere, water disappeared somewhere. That's the most reasonable inference. Somewhere it disappeared. Is it just a coincidence? I mean, Mr. Sanders' inference is, well, it must be the pump. And he uses some plaintiff theory that never works anymore to justify that it must be the pump, which I don't share his opinion. Well, the same kind of logic would say, well, if it must be the meter, it must be the RO unit, or it must be the water softener. That's the same way it applies to that kind of thinking as well. It has nothing to do with you being good. I think we're a good community services district. I think we have a great fire department. We have great administration. We do a lot of good things for the community, too. We get free concerts. We're all good here. That has nothing to do with the issues, whether the community should pick up the water disappeared from you, and that's why we have policies. That's the issue. Now, all this sucking up, we're all great, kumbaya and all that kind of stuff, that's bitching. But the issue is who's going to pay. That's the issue. And I don't know. I'm concerned what the policy is. I don't want to set a bad precedent.
During the winter when the wells are full and the water is running down to the ocean, that could have been McKinney's water. So the point is you can't store all the water coming down from heaven, rising up out of the earth anyway. So we're asking for a modification on excess water that there's no evidence it wasn't the meter. There's no evidence it was. There's no evidence it was a leak. There's no evidence it wasn't. So we're asking for us to be considered as a modification at this time.
But if the meter is now working properly, there's no evidence it's a meter. I'd like to ask Director Sanders, what would you like to do about this? What would you propose? Sorry.
Well, if Mrs. McKinney can wait, I'd like to know what the amount of the bill would have been had they consumed an average amount of water for the time in question.
All right, what were you gonna say?
There has been some discussion whether deciding in favor of the applicant in this case would be a change in policy, but really it's been touched on by the lawyers on the board. Really, we're not changing policy. We're not granting or not granting based on somebody's reputation or history or whatever. It's a factual question, and the facts, we don't have much in the way of facts either way. That's the problem. So whatever the board decides the facts are will drive the decision. If it's more likely than not that there was a leak, then they're entitled to relief. Leak at the meter, I mean. And more likely than not, it was the other side of the meter and their fault, then they aren't entitled to relief.
Right.
And I just wanted to make one other statement because I may have been confusing with my comments when I made reference to similarities between the two accounts based on what Director Sanders said. My statement was as to the good account standing, the good stewardship of the accounts, and the payments on these accounts. I wasn't making reference that they're similar because they're not. So I just want to clarify that. And then for Director Sanders' second question, if you'll refer to the last page of this particular staff report, if I were to make just a rough guesstimate of what their bill might be, if you go back and look at Ms. McKinney's payment history or account history, I'd guess anywhere between 160 and 180 a month, you know, based on their what we consider to be their average consumption.
For water only?
No, water and sewer. So water, it looks like it's about, if you go back and look in the one column to the left on this spreadsheet, it looks like water would be anywhere from $70 to $140.
Why don't we split the difference? Why don't we treat this Solomon-like? It makes me feel so in tune with my history. Want to cut the water, baby? Greg.
Would you like to sit down, Laura?
Well, I'm glad you think I'm a nice person, and I am, but that actually wasn't part of the letter, or, you know, it was the reality of just the facts here, and I appreciate that it doesn't change for everyone, but I also appreciate being considered and having an option for modification. So, thank you.
What about cutting the baby in half? Well,
If that's the will of the board, I'm willing to
Would
go
you make
along.
A motion, sir?
Well, what the well, the bill or the water part? Not
well. Take well, the average.
The bill is roughly 50. Well, I would. I mean, the bill here is roughly $1,050, very roughly, two months.
How do you get $1,050?
Well, adding the two together, the 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
Okay. And if you decide on 50%, well, then that's it.
But that includes the sewer as well.
Well, that's also that's impacted.
Yeah, oh. Since the sewer the rates sewer are tied to the water leaking. Rates.
Yeah. Well, unless it was leaking out into the landscape someplace.
Yeah. And the reason why I'm suggesting that Solomonic solution is not only because it's consistent with my history and it's presumptively wise, but Ms. McKinney's argument that you articulated has some validity, and the other side that staff has indicated that it could be the water softener that has sure. equal validity. So let's just cut the baby in half. I mean, that's what I was thinking.
I'm willing to go along with that.
Would you want to make a motion that we do a 50% reduction?
I'll make a motion. We'll go Solomonic on this.
On the two months? On the
yes.
two bills? In
For the total bill? Are you talking yeah. about the total bill?
Yeah.
That seems fair, doesn't it?
Is that a motion?
Yes.
I'll second the motion.
Okay.
And the reason then you want to do it is because what?
Solomon said so.
Because there was no leak, the inferences cut both ways. Yeah. You could reasonably infer that it was the result of something going wrong during the installation of the meter. You might be able to reasonably infer that it was the reverse osmosis
unit. For 2 months?
Yeah.
If something went wrong with the installation of the meter, it would go 2 months and then correct itself? Or, you know, I just think that we ought to, the policy is that somebody has to pay for the water, and we're saying we'll pay for the water because we might be at fault in some way. Is that?
That's the suggestion. That's the inference that I think can be drawn from the facts.
Because and the RO unit going out could have been the RO unit, but it could have been
I think attributable at least in part to the installation.
If we'd not done a meter exchange during this period, then I think there would not be.
I don't think there'd be a question then.
Right. Okay.
All right. Did I get a second?
Yeah, we had.
Ready for the question?
Yeah, second. Yeah, call for the question.
Okay. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. We move to item C, which is another water bill modification. And I have Cassandra Foster. Are you representing the applicant? Thank you.
Okay, so this is, we're recommending that the modification to their January-February utility bill for 2811 Yorkshire Drive be denied. The consumption in question is 131 units of water billed for this time period. Typically, the average for this account is 4 units over the past 12 months. Mm-hmm. The customer stated that the house is unoccupied, but that they make regular checks. They recently inherited the property due to the death of a family member. Our initial inspection by the water department on March 3rd revealed a leak and reported that the leak was on the water supply line on the owner's side of the water meter. The customer did report that they repaired the leak after applying for this water bill modification. They're currently on a payment plan, and they are current on their account. The total bill in question for that 131 units is $804.75 for water, $261.65 for sewer, for a total bill of $1,066.40. Again, there's no evidence of fault on the part of the district, and the meter was functioning properly and accurately, and that it is the property owner's responsibility to maintain their property's water service line. So it looks like now that their water consumption is back down to normal, as their March-April bill is for 7 units. Therefore, we recommend that it be denied.
Okay. Any questions for staff?
I have a question before we hear from the applicant. Okay. Where was the leak?
We found the leak right at the main, the junction of the main and the line to the house. And it did look like possibly it could have been because of when they changed the main out or the meter out. It was right at the junction of the meter box and the line into the house.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere?
And it's gone back to normal now.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Do you have anything you want to share with us right now?
Well, if you can reduce the bill at all, that would be great. What I would really request is that we waive the sewer fee, as the water did not even impact or affect your sewer at all, because it went out into the front yard.
Mr. President, that has been our policy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Is that...
if that's the case, then the sewer charge should be not removed in its entirety, but reduced to what the average was, I guess.
Correct. All right. And the water bill stay as is?
Mr. President, unless the staff tells us that they investigated the installation of the new meter and found that there was an improper installation... I mean, if the leak was right at the junction where the service line connects to the back of the meter, I would assume that our utilities department went out and took a look at that.
You know, I'm going to call Pat Clark and put him on the spot since he's in the audience, and it looks like your initials are on this inspection report, to come up here and tell me what you saw. You're here. Lucky
right.
You. Obviously, he would. Thank you, Mr. Union Rep.
Touché.
Would you come?
Sure.
Yeah, he'll come to the microphone there. Okay. All right.
I guess I talked to your husband out there.
It was my sister's husband.
Your sister's husband. When we went out there and looked at the meter.
Come to the mic.
When we went out and looked at the meter, I didn't see any leak right by the meter at all. It was somewhere by that big redwood tree that's in the middle of the yard. Redwood tree this big, right on top of the line.
And that's the way I understood the comment. It says leak on supply line from a house.
Yeah, we looked in the box and there was no water in there at the time.
Can we have a public discussion?
No, all I said was when they unearthed it, he found the break right at where the junction was.
Yeah,
that's all I was told.
But Pat, you attribute the leak to the presence of tree roots.
But we looked in the box when we went out there like we always do. Like right. We did at your house. You were there.
Right.
I was there at your place at that time. And it wasn't leaking in the box at the time. I mean, there's a meter. There's a junction.
Yeah.
It was dry there.
It was on the outside.
So they might have fixed it later and found a leak later or something. But at that time when we were out there, shut the water off to stop it, it wasn't leaking in the box.
Any questions for Pat?
I'll move to
thanks, Pat.
To reduce the sewer fees down to what this customer's average was, for the last 6 months? So, what kind of an average do we 12
take? 12 months. It's four units.
12 months. But deny the forgiveness on the water charge.
Second the motion.
Okay. Any discussion?
No.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Ready for
Thank
the
you.
Question.
All right. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Okay. Mr. President, before we go on to the next item, I believe there are some young folks here tonight who would like to address the board. I saw them in the audience a few minutes ago.
Maybe
but
they
now they've
up.
Disappeared. Are they here?
Yeah,
I would suggest that we allow them the opportunity to speak to us so they don't have to stay till the bitter end.
Or if they have a spokesperson that would like to speak on their behalf, yeah.
Kids? I thought this was an adults-only event.
Well,
they're citizens, too.
We want to encourage our youth and not turn them off. If you had to stand here and wait until it's their turn, they'd
Don, they're mere chattels.
Very expensive chattel.
Kids are coming.
Okay. Ooh. Wait a minute.
Big chattel.
That's
a big chattel.
Maybe it's
Yeah, no kidding.
Are you going to speak on behalf of the young people?
I guess so.
Okay, do you give us your name and where you...
My name is Bobby Malone. I'm from Cambria. I've lived here for about 10 years. And I use the skate park all the time. And sometimes it's not that full, but a lot of times there are a lot of people there. So it does get used. And the more stuff that's there, the more that it's used. When there used to be more stuff there, there was a lot of people. But even now, there's a lot of people that use it a lot of times. So it is worth having there, I think. And especially considering how big and expensive the skate parks in a lot of the other towns around here are, I don't think it's too unreasonable to have just, you know, a small skate park here with maybe this and maybe one or two other, you know, pyramid or some other box and stuff. I don't, considering, you know, Los Osos has a huge cement park that was just built. So it'd be nice to just have, you know, the ramp here and maybe a few other ramp stuff. And I know people are willing to help build new ramps if, you know, we don't have the money to afford them, but the other people are willing to donate or bring their own skate equipment and stuff like that if that was able to be done.
Okay. Any questions?
Does it cost money to use the Los Osos park?
Yeah, I think it costs, I'm not really sure what the price is, a few dollars for each day that you use it.
And we don't charge for here, do we?
No.
Not even donations or anything? We should for the out-of-towners to get some easy money.
Yeah, that'd be nice. But,
yes. May I make a suggestion?
Sure.
The fact that you just said that there are people, perhaps your parents or other people, are willing to help with construction and repair of some of the... I know some of the ramps are greatly in need of repair and they've been taken away.
Yeah.
If you or your families could think of compiling a list of people that would be willing to help, and perhaps if you just forward it to the general manager, we could make sure it gets to the people who are going to manage the skate park from now
on. Okay. I've given my name to the community center when it was there before and my email address and phone number stuff, so they can get in touch with me. But
don't go there.
Yeah. That was beforehand. But
it'd be good if you could get the adults to identify who would be, all other adults or who would be willing to participate. And because that's really been the issue for keeping that park up is really people are elusive. They say they'd like to help, but when it comes down to the weekend when the repair work's going to start, then people don't show up.
Well, I've only been aware of one time when they had any. I know they painted the ramps at one point, and that was the only time I was really aware of anything. When the other box and stuff were there, there was at least a dozen times I've nailed stuff back together. I've put stuff on. So a lot of people have been doing that, but I'm not really sure when those times were when other buildings were supposed to be done. But.
Well, at any rate, I'm just saying if we could actually identify people we could call when a work party is ready to go, that would be great. So if you could help us get that list, that would be wonderful.
All right.
Mr. President, is the issue here the question of whether or not the skate park is going to remain open, or is the issue here one of maintenance? What's the issue? I guess that's what we need to have clarified.
Should we ask them?
Well, what do you think the issue is? Is it the keeping it open or keeping it maintained or both?
It'd be nice to, I mean, right now we're just kind of, because we're afraid it's going to be closed, we're just kind of trying to keep it, at least to have the ramp the way we have it now. But it'd be really nice to have at least what we had before, where there were some boxes and ramps or even more than that, or, just a rail or something like that. But,
My suggestion would be to have the staff and perhaps even the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commission take a look at this. I understand the insurance issues. They are pretty extreme, but working perhaps with the Lions Club, something can be done to assure the community and particularly the users of the skate park facility that just because the community center is closed does not mean necessarily that the skate park is going to be closed.
I believe that there are people that are taking it on. As a matter of fact, there was somebody was going to come in. They thought it was on the agenda tonight so that's why I'm saying is, since we've got you here, Mr. Malone, that if you could help us get names to people that would help, that would be great.
I think. we can give these young people some assurances that we'll do everything we can to keep it open.
Okay. All right. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you going to speak on this subject, Jerry?
Yes, my name is Jerry McKinnon. If we look back on the history of the skate park, it had a development of events that caused it to be across the street. Perhaps the general manager is not aware that at one time there was a storage unit at the back of the parking lot, and when the young people wanted to use a skate park, they used a corner of the parking lot. They set up their ramps, they built their ramps, they did everything necessary. When they finished, it was put back into the shed. Then it was moved across the street on CCSD property. And if you keep an eye on that CCSD property, you can see that it goes through a variety of stages as well. I would hope that a caveat to doing what we can for the youngsters is that we convince them to take a responsibility in keeping that park in good shape. It's hard to point at a particular individual, whether they are transients who come through and knock down the fence and tip over the porta potties and do all those kinds of things that come very close to being vandalism. Whether it's our youngsters who are doing it or out-of-towners, there still needs to be a responsibility for maintaining that park that I think goes beyond the scope of the CCSD being required to maintain that park. So if in your agreement with them, I hope that you would make some consideration of it being a two-way street. Thank you.
And that is the current agreement. I mean, the current agreement we had with the Community Center of Cambria was that the ramps are owned by them. They are not owned by the CCSD, and that they did have to carry, you know, general liability insurance. We have, you know, property liability insurance, obviously, and they have to maintain the area. The district is not responsible for maintaining the property while they lease the property. So I've been contacted by a couple of groups and individuals who I've provided a copy of the ground lease agreement and asked that if they were to coordinate some movement and want to approach the board, I would place that on the agenda for consideration as long as those couple of elements or at least similar elements are proven.
Thank you, but I want to say that Jerry is correct. There's been a significant amount of vandalism over time, and I think if we could all look, take some responsibility, particularly the users and those of us who pass by, to just kind of nod and look and help make it so that kind of thing doesn't happen. Sometimes it's in the middle of the night, and there's not much we can do about it, but there has been a great deal of damage done over the years to the property by vandals.
Maybe it's Sunshine the Raptor, yes, swooping down.
We have one more public comment. Yes, sir.
John McKelligan, and the kids, I use the park myself and skate on the park, but I think it's a good place also for the kids to have a place to go. It is a park, and it as time's going on, skating's becoming more accepted, and I think it's similar to maybe a basketball park, a tennis park, or anything, but you're right about the park being kind of beat up every once in a while, but I've also noticed that people have been keeping it cleaner, and the vandalism really has kind of, and as you said, you don't know, you know, where it's kind of at, but the one nice thing about it is a place for the kids to go, and maybe if they are doing things that are bad, it's maybe better than on the businesses where, I don't know how you know, but a lot of times kids that skate in front of businesses, people, the business owners usually don't like that. So it does have a place in the community, meaning that, you know, it's a place for the kids to go, a park.
Business owners don't like what?
Business owners really aren't really happy with people skating in front of their businesses. If you're a business owner, you really don't want people skating in front of you. Usually it's noisy, people are afraid of all kinds of reasons. Skating is really, you know, it's a dangerous sport.
Dude, skateboarding ain't a crime.
That's right. That's my feeling right there. So I feel that the skating for the kids is definitely a big plus.
Thank you.
Sure.
I appreciate you coming tonight. Thank you.
Well, I think the message is pretty loud and clear. There's no present intention to close the skate park. In fact, quite the opposite. I think the district is interested in keeping it open. There are some maintenance issues. They have to be addressed. And we should include that in any agreement we have with.
And I'm aware there's a transition team, and yeah. We just need to get only the contractual formalities taken care of about the ownership, the maintenance, and a new ground lease agreement before the board.
A great deal of money has been spent that just the labor, the materials alone for the large half pipe was over $10,000, and the fence and the pavement. So I have no fear that it's not going to disappear. So it's there, and it just needs to be maintained and upgraded, and just we all need to pitch in and figure out how to make that happen.
All right. Can we take a 10-minute break now, and then we'll come back to the budget?
Democracy in action.
The chief has an announcement.
For all the people in the audience here and for everybody at home, we just wanted to remind everybody that we'd like to make sure that we all have a safe and sane 4th of July season. Just a reminder that safe and sane fireworks and illegal fireworks, both of those are not legal in Cambria, and as well, they're not legal in San Luis Obispo County except for a few small areas. Also, state parks and your CCSD fire department does not allow open fires and burning on the beach for the same reason. So we just want to remind everybody, if you have neighbors that have fireworks, ask them to put them away. If we see them, we will confiscate them. And if they have enough, it can be a misdemeanor or a felony for possession of them. So they just need to be careful. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. I hope that everyone at home.
Chief?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I expect the bicycle survey is going to have your bicycle crew is getting ready for the 4th of July patrol.
Actually, it seems that if we work better, if we have people in stealth and in ghillie suits on the ranch out there hiding so we can leap on people. Now, the bicycle patrol doesn't do very well on the 4th of July just because a lot of the people who are culprits are people who are at property rentals or timeshares, and they come here and light them off on the back porch. So it's better to be out in vehicles all over the community. So we'll be out in a bunch of different ways and methods to make sure that people have a safe 4th of July, everybody gets to enjoy it, and somebody's fun with fireworks doesn't cost somebody else their property, their home, or their lives. So,
but you do respond when there's some instances going off, right?
We do. The Highway Patrol, the Sheriff's Department, us, and the Department of Forestry, we all respond, whoever gets the call, and investigate. And usually the presence of the big red engine driving through the neighborhood causes everybody to put those things away. So,
yeah, I've heard people say, here comes Chief Bob, let's split.
Sometimes they go, here comes the big red honker, that big fire engine coming through. So we just ask everybody, we don't want somebody to be having fun and torch the vegetation or catch somebody's house on fire. So just put them away and enjoy the public fireworks show.
Thank you, Chief. At this time, I'm going to skip the budget because we have a lot of other items to deal with, and we're going to use that last. So we're going to move to item 8A.
Okay, 8A is to adopt Resolution 38-2006, ordering the submission to the voters a question relating to the provision of water service outside the district boundaries at the consolidated general election to be held on Tuesday, November 7, 2006, and the report will be presented by District Counsel Art Montandon.
Thank you.
Honorable President and board members, you have before your resolution that, if adopted, would place on the November 7th ballot a ballot measure that would be considered by the voters of Cambria. If favorably approved, the measure would create an ordinance that would be placed in the city's, and sorry, in the district's approval to the voters of the district. The property owner seeking potable water service will pay the cost of the application and election in advance. So what this would require the district to do, if somebody sought water to be extended outside the current district boundaries, has come to the district and apply for an amendment to the water master plan, which would be go through the environmental review process. And if that process was favorable and the board considered and amended the water master plan, then it could be submitted to the voters like this measure would, to be approved or disapproved by the voters. The cost of all this would be borne by the person or the applicant seeking the water, and that's how it would be until amended by the voters in the future.
Thank you. Any questions for General Counsel?
Just a comment, Mr. President. I would like to compliment the District Council on using the concept of simplicity as beauty.
Yes,
this is very simple. It's easy to understand, and there's beauty in it because of that.
Well, Art is a simple man.
Very smart, simple man.
Simply smart.
Any more questions for District Council? I have two public comments. Mickey Burton, followed by Richard Hawley.
Hey, Mahala Burton, Cambria resident. Thank you for allowing these comments. Thank you for the ordinance and all of the research that was done to draw it up. I just got this paper with the ordinance tonight. It's really hard to try and analyze something like this when you're trying to listen to the fire chief, Mr. Bodie, and all of the other interesting material regarding this community.
Okay.
So I'd like to ask you not to vote on the resolution tonight to allow more time for the community to have an opportunity to digest this and maybe add a little more meat to it. I'm seeing some weasel words in here. It may be simplicity, may be golden, but and I'm not saying the weasel words for you. I'm saying the weasel words for someone that wants the water. Other people using weasel words, such as completing environmental review. Well, what does that really mean? Is that CEQA review? I mean, things can be really tightened up here. So, I mean, this is a very positive thing, but we do not have the desal plant yet. And we would have to be able to analyze this, have it vetted, all by July to maybe make it even more simple but tighter, so that a citizens committee be appointed with Rick as chair. That's what I... Oh, then the last thing I'd like to just say is originally there was going to be two issues, and Mr. Montandon was going to research the second issue, which was we thought that the two issues could be joined, and that was annexation, not any annexation of property into the urban services line. But I see that this is silent, and there was no mention of whatever happened to that idea.
And the way I decided to include it all in one paragraph, and the way I included it was stating that it would be the extension of potable water outside the current boundaries of the district. So any annexation would fall within that definition.
Okay.
And it would require. And I did that for specific reasons to fit into the LAFCO process that allow us the discretion in our water master plan at the board level to put an end to the annexation by just saying we won't amend the plan.
Okay. Well, thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. Richard Hawley.
Richard Hawley, resident of Cambria, and also the executive director of Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust. And I really do appreciate brevity, and this certainly falls into that those parameters, and I really appreciate that. There's a number of issues that come to mind. One is what Mr. Montandon just alluded to about the portion of the annexation issue, and I think there's some issues with that, and I'd like to have the time to look at other ordinances that communities have put around their communities, and most of them have been for 20, 25-year time periods, and if someone wants to break that ordinance, then as this ordinance alludes to, then they would have to vote that way, and you'd have to have some number. And this doesn't define that number. Could it be 49%, 50%? And and that's what it would take to undo it. So I think there's a lot of folks in this community. If someone wants to undo it, then they would have to convince the voters. But I think it's the as Mr. Sanders had pointed out, the simplicity is incredible here, and it's almost too simple for me to understand because there's a lot of things in it that aren't mentioned. It's by inference, and anytime you have things by inference, you have challenges by people, and that's what we don't want. So I would like to help the district in any way I can. Green Space has some funds available to have this analyzed by a third party, if you will, a law firm that specializes in urban growth boundaries, and get an opinion on that, and maybe talk to Mr. Montandon and see where the thinking is with LAFCO and that type of thing. But I want to commend you for doing the first step, and this step might be the step, but I'm hoping that we can make it tighter than it is.
Well, Rick, let me just tell you something. Sometimes we think with our brains, and sometimes we think with our brains and hearts, and sometimes, and I think that's what, when Greg was talking about the simplicity of it and when he complimented Art, and I want to compliment him too. Sometimes you just feel so good about it that it's just right. If you feel that it can, and if Mickey and you feel, and some community people feel that it can be tightened, even if we approve this tonight, I think you ought to continue doing the work and bring it up because I think we're responsive. So if there's something that, I mean, as a lawyer, I think this is a beautiful piece of work, and I compliment Art professionally, even though he's a simple man. But so well, it's easy for him.
You know, if
Elon,
the door,
you just
if,
can't help yourself.
If you know, I'm not criticizing this at all in the sense that I don't think it's good, and I agree with you that simplicity and the rest of the board is really a good thing. If the board is open to suggestions that might improve.
Our state election is after November 7th. I assume it's a year away at least, maybe a year and a half. But that would be the next available date for that. The other thing is that we can, I mean, I'll be happy to meet with anyone, and if we can improve it, certainly do so. And we have until that date to call another meeting and have this resolution modified, if adopted. That would take a special meeting. The other point that we can make as far as tightening it, it's just like we've seen a number of propositions, Proposition 13, Proposition 218, other things that affect the district that have been enacted by the voters. But what the legislature does after that is they enact rulemaking type authority and their own legislation to implement it. So we can, in that process, define what environmental review is. We can define a process. We can set fees. We can do a number of things. This is almost like a constitutional-type amendment, and we can be implemented differently. That's why it is simple. That's why it's subject to interpretation. The other thing, and I appreciate a law firm that understands urban growth boundaries, but this urban growth boundaries are not a function of this district. We're subject to them, but we have no authority to amend them. And so we don't have to, because we don't have a zoning authority. So this type of ordinance has to be written within the framework of the authority of a water public agency like the district. So mm-hmm. Whomever helps, that type of experience would be the most helpful.
I'm glad you said that, Art, because I was going to say that he's talking about having some law firm vetted or whatever. I would assume, because I have watched your work for so long, is that you've researched it and you've come and you've put it together, just as you said, within the framework of this agency. And I for one, trust the fact that you brought it to us this way, that you've thought about it, and this is the proper one for us to have.
And the hardest thing, and I don't include it in all my report, I mean, I have a file this thick on the research I did on this before I wrote this one paragraph. It's not something...
Yeah. And I think you misunderstood me, Ms. Coben. I'm not criticizing Mr. Montandon at all, but I think anyone, even a good lawyer, would admit that a second opinion is always good.
Except if it follows my opinion.
There you go. So, if the board is open to suggestions later on, that's wonderful. I really appreciate that.
Let me offer this suggestion. We do have until the 26th of July.
What, can I interrupt you one moment through the board, Chair? Is there an urgent framework?
Mm-hmm. Right. Coastal Commission, give us a kind of a heads up that they wanted us to address growth-inducing projects.
That I was saying that in code.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I understood that, but I don't think the general public out there understood that.
Right. If I can offer this suggestion, we do have until July the 26th. If Mr. Hawley wants to have another law firm look at this, and if they come back and say there's a fatal flaw in this, then that can be reported to Mr. Montandon. And if there is a fatal flaw, we ought to know about it. And that would, I think, be sufficient cause to have a special meeting. Absent a fatal flaw, then
let's just do it. We got so much stuff on our table.
Well, here's the situation that we don't want to get ourselves into. Initiative law is very complex. For example, on the issue of annexation, this district does not have the power to usurp a matter that has been determined by the legislature to be of regional or statewide concern. The legislature has vested the entire annexation process in the local agency formation commissions in each county in the state. So we can't directly regulate the annexation process. We can't directly prevent it. We can't do anything to thwart it, that power having been given to LAFCO. I think what Mr. Montandon has done is, given that stricture, come up with something that is legally acceptable. We don't want to get ourselves into a situation like Los Osos got itself into, where they hired a law firm. The law firm drafted an initiative that I think was patently unlawful right from the get-go, because the initiative attempted to regulate administrative matters as opposed to legislative matters. And the California Supreme Court has said, practically since the initiative power was vested in the people, that initiatives cannot regulate in matters that are administrative, only in matters that are legislative. I would be interested in knowing.
Be done with it tonight.
That's my suggestion.
I'm sorry, yes, I didn't understand that.
And okay. The spirit here is to improve, or I'm here to help. And if we can, and we're willing to spend the money to help. And if it turns out this is great, then no harm, no foul. If we find something, then it's to the community's benefit.
What are the three names again?
It's Shoot, Mahaley, and Weinberger.
Mahaley and Weinberger.
I'd go with Weinberger.
Okay, you got him. Or her, I'm not sure. Thank you so much.
And may I suggest you have whomever in the firm is to work on this, contact me first, and we can go through my rationale on it. And I mean, I said I have some research already to back up why certain things are in here, and I can share that with them, save green space some money, hopefully.
Thank you so much. That's nice of you. Appreciate that.
Yes.
Come on up. Got to be on the record. Yeah, you please. Can't talk from back there.
Sorry, Mahala Burton. Didn't you say that this any changes had to be done in just 2 weeks because the date for the governor?
No, we have to submit it to the county to be incorporated into the November 7th election by the 25th of July. Is that right, Kathy?
26th.
Now, if we look at this again and find out that there's a whole host of problems, I'll call the board and board president and ask for a special meeting, and we may not even make that deadline because we certainly don't want to put something on the ballot that's illegal. But if not, we will leave it on, and it will be placed in the November 7th ballot. If we can clarify a lot of the issues raised by offering subsequent ordinances that would implement this particular voter-enacted ballot measure, then we may come back with that also as part of the recommendation later.
Okay, thank you.
I have
I have two more public comments. Bill Allen, followed by Wayne Rayburn.
Hi, Bill Allen, Cambria resident. I have no problem with you voting on this thing tonight. I have to say I am basically against any extension of water service beyond the lines, but I also have to say I believe in the wisdom of the voters of Cambria that we would not elect a CCSD board that did not have the wisdom to not put anything on the ballot except something that could be proven to be basically a 100% benefit to the community. And I'm not talking about...
Thank you, Bill. Wayne.
Good evening. I'm Wayne Rayburn. I live in Cambria. I'm representing the North Coast Alliance. We've discussed this several times in our meetings. We've had Rick come to a meeting on one occasion. It's nice to be the last speaker and say I support everything that's been said. But I am a little concerned about the one issue of environmental review. I heard what Art said, but I'd like to have something in there like California Environmental Quality Act or something like that, review, so that there's no misunderstanding with another board later on about you want a real review, you just don't want some superficial, you know, pass over and then go from there. So,
What if the state legislature decides to revamp and repeal and redo the whole CEQA process?
Yeah, beyond our control.
Yeah, but then...
But it's at this point in time, I think it's the best thing we have. Now, I'm not trying to second-guess Art, but that's the only thing that bothers me about the whole thing is what does review mean? You know, a nice, tight review or just some...
I can respond to that. My intent was to make it generic because there are situations possibly along the coast where it wouldn't be the California Environmental Quality Act, it would be the National Environmental Protection Act, under which the environmental review would be conducted or in conjunction therefore. That's one of the things we can clarify by an ordinance after also, that the environmental review means this type of environmental review. It's my opinion, and maybe someone in the future would have a different one, is that any extension of water service, an outside utility user agreement, or an annexation would require environmental review or CEQA document of some type anyway. But this would make it specific, not only that it has to be done, but also that it had to be paid for by the person asking for it.
Okay. But that's what you pay them for, see?
He's good. Yeah.
The other thing, I would hate to see you slip the deadline because contrary to what Rick said, I'm more of a let's get it done guy. Let's move ahead, bird in hand, you know. Move ahead, get it in place. It's just a piece of what you've been working on for years. So I'd hate to see it go another year and then have to come back and go through all this again. So thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. All right, bring it back to the board, please, for action.
I'll move to adopt Resolution 38-2006, ordering the submission of the voters a question relating to provision of water service outside the district boundaries at the consolidated general election to be held on.
Any opposed? So carried. Thank you very much. Item B is North Coast Swap.
Item 8B is to approve the request from North Coast Swap to add the word preserve to the Fiscalini Ranch name. They gave you their explanation just so that it closely more identifies with what they do as a group. And you heard earlier from Joel and Butler that they've changed their name officially to the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. So they're asking you to change the ranch name to the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. We have found no legal reason why having the word preserve added would cause us any problems. And there's about five or six support letters from similar people who voted to change the ranch name earlier attached to your staff report. And Joellen Butler's here if you have any questions.
I'll make a motion.
We have some public comments. Oh. So, okay, but any discussion at this point? All right. Anything you want to add, Joellen? Only if you want.
Hey, Joellen, if I make a motion to approve this, would you hold off on your comments?
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to move.
I do have a public comment from Mickey Burton. I believe you didn't? Oh, okay, I didn't see. I'm sorry. Okay, we have no public comment.
Okay, I'll move to approve request from
North Coast Swap, or, well, that's not your name anymore, is it?
It was when I did the staff report.
Well, whatever the new name is of North Coast Swap, to add the word preserve to the Fiscalini Ranch name.
Second the motion.
Any more discussion? No. All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carried. That was quick.
Okay, and the final business agenda item, anyway, is to accept the Build-Out Reduction Finance Committee plan for the Build-Out Reduction Program and direct staff to include it with the Environmental Impact Report for the Water Master Plan. Just before their chairperson, Wayne Perrick, approaches, I just wanted for the public's information and to let the board know that this 9 or 10 member committee started January 26th, right shortly thereafter you appointed them. The members include Wayne Perrick, your chairperson, Ron Crummett, John Linder, Wayne Ryburn, Bill Allen, Gail Robinette, Bob Hill, Wayne Atto, and Jeanette Johnson. They were tasked with developing financing options and or alternatives for the implementation of the CCSD's draft build-out reduction program. They met each Wednesday afternoon, and they provided the following public presentations. On March 23rd, they came to the CCSD board meeting and provided summary 16th town hall questions and then the frequently asked questions. And then they're here tonight to ask you to accept their finance committee plan and then provide further direction to staff. And upon that, I welcome Wayne Perrick to the podium. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Tammy. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
I'm Wayne Perrick, a resident of Cambria, and I'll be very brief. Thank you for mentioning each and every name on our committee. I'm proud of each and every one of them. They did a terrific job, and the work product that you have in front of you is a result of all their hard work and labor, thoughts, and expertise. So again, as Tammy indicated, we met, had a town hall meeting. I think there were approximately 150 people attending that meeting. We got some very good feedback, good questions, good comments, things that we took back into committee, discussed, and all of those questions have been incorporated into our frequently asked questions list and are already on the website. So, again, we hope you receive this product and it becomes incorporated as a component of the environmental impact report. And, of course, if you have any questions of us, we're happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the Wayne on behalf of the committee?
No questions, Mr. President, but I think we owe Wayne and the entire committee a debt of gratitude for a job exceptionally well done.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you just took the words right out of my mouth. It's very, very unsanitary.
You.
Mean, but
didn't mean to do that, though.
A debt of gratitude, does that mean that we still owe them gratitude? Yeah. We can't give
and
it to
and
them?
We will for a long time.
I do have one public comment.
You're not going to charge us for that debt, are you, Wayne?
No. it's gathering interest.
Mickey, are you speaking to this motion?
Well, I wrote my comments. I keep thinking
that. Okay, that's fine. Your written comments will be passed in. Thank you.
I thought I put one in.
I have one for a public comment. I'm not sure. All right, if you should come forward, please.
Rick Hawley. And again, I support this whole concept, as I said in the community meeting. But I have a couple of questions. Actually, one specific question on page 10 under program implementation. And on item 6, it says, offer conditional intent to serve letters to...
In answer to the first question, all our intent to serve letters are conditional and have been for many years. In other words, even though you get one... It says in many places in that letter that we can revoke it if you don't fulfill the terms of it. We can take it back for that. We can actually stop development up to the point where they construct the foundations by withdrawing the intent to serve letter and not suffer any damages for a taking. So those letters all state that and have for many years. So that's why the word conditional is in this line. As far as lifting the moratorium, we could if we made... felt that we had enough water in the future to serve the future needs and had enough to deal with the current needs of the district, lift the moratorium today. There's no legal restriction on that. Obviously, this board wouldn't do that, and the facts, frankly, aren't there to do that. But at a point, somewhere along the construction and desalinization process, that's the first point they can consider it and lift it. Doesn't mean they'll do that, but we wanted to put in this report the first point so the public would know when it could first be considered.
Okay, thank you.
I have one public comment, Jerry.
Yeah.
Try to stay awake.
Jerry McKinnon. Page 6, please. The very first paragraph, the first two funding measures that the committee agreed to recommend are, number one, an increase in water rates. Then skip number two, and it says the rationale for the first measure is to spread costs among existing and future homeowners who will benefit from maintaining the existing character of Cambria and preserving property values. Are those really the two reasons why you want to raise our water rates? Well, first of all, if you add 1,000 meters to Cambria, you're not going to maintain the existing character of Cambria. And secondly, preserving property values, I think that's an explanation for all of this business of prohibiting the expansion of residential units in Cambria. If you approve of this and you approve of that wording, I really feel bad, because that's not the reason that the CCSD should raise water rates just to keep property values up.
That we have to take cognizance of is the woeful lack of infrastructure and the rather poor state of the infrastructure that we do have. And there is just no way on God's green earth that we could ever abide having every single lot in Cambria that constitutes a legal building site built on. We don't have the street system. We don't have the electrical distribution system. We don't have the telephone system. We don't have space in the schools. The roads that we have are in state of disrepair. We don't have the traffic circulation system. I can go on and on. So I think what is really driving this whole process is taking cognizance of these infrastructure problems, and we have to draw the line somewhere. And the board has made the policy decision that the line will be drawn at 4,650 residential units, and that's really what this process is all about.
Yes, John.
Can we just have the motion yet?
I wanted to add one last thing, though. I did not put, as you see in my subject or on the agenda item, it's not that when you provide further direction to staff, I didn't mean to leave out the fact that it was very clear when we met with the ad hoc committee and the build-out reduction financing team that the further direction would be that the staff would work with the PROS Commission and land trust organizations to start developing agreements for implementation of the program. Mm-hmm. And I've got several of your comments from the ad hoc and the Citizens Committee with regard to how that goes about. And in fact, I'll be meeting with Ben Bolden tomorrow morning to go over these details. He is going to be the chairperson for the Open Space Committee on PROS. So.
Well, if I was to make the motion, and maybe Greg was going
just
to
just a
that,
comment yeah. Before you do, Director Coben. There's a laundry list of things that need to be done, and I just want to take about 30 seconds and tick them off so that we're all.
I was going to do add them.
Oh, okay. We need to develop agreements with land trust organizations. PROS needs to develop a program with the CCSD to facilitate voluntary lot retirements, lot mergers, and so forth. I think the board would really like to see integration of the forest management plan into the build-out reduction program, and I think PROS ought to take that forest committee work product and put it to good use.
You want to add anything to it?
Well, maybe we could shorten it for the motion, something like as it is, but work with PROS to implement the.
I have those notes fuller. Since we've met previously.
Yeah. How about this? I'd like to move that pursuant to agenda item 8C on June 22, 2006, the recommendations 1, 2, 3 be followed.
Well,
consistent with the discussion that we just had. I'll second the motion.
All right. Any more discussion? All those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Thank you.
And for the public at home, there is on our website at CambriaCSD.org, if you click under What's New and Build Out Reduction Program Updates, there is a list of references and materials that one could resort to in order to be up to date. And then my contact information, Wayne Parrix, anyone who has any questions can certainly feel free to contact us.
All right. I think now we move back to 7D, which is the budget.
And this is going to be in compliance with the direction that we received from you last month with regard to a one-year fiscal year budget beginning July 1st, this next month, within a week, for the fiscal year 2006-2007. And we're looking for your approval after you conduct a public hearing. And I'm going to turn it over now to Finance Officer Patrick Bradley.
Okay, Patrick, liven it up, baby. Okay.
It's coming. It's coming.
It's cheaper than Ambien.
You know, that's true. Clean. It is.
There's a clean handle on the
record. At the May board meeting, you directed us to come back. So what we have done is we did a projection for the current budget year, 05-06, and then we received the department requests for 06-07. And essentially took the department request. It was sort of a two-step process, not to be confused with the country western dance, by the way. And so we...
You asked?
Yeah, you asked for it. So we put the two side by side, and we weren't necessarily trying to come up with the same revenue and same expenditure, but as long as we got to the point where we had the same financial results, which is what we had done in general fund as well as water and wastewater. So with that, I've got a brief presentation to go through, and the budget that you're actually asked to approve tonight is the one that's in the bar graph that we showed to you at the May board meeting. And this bar chart was predicated upon April actual figures. So what we were projecting in was a surplus in general fund of $29,000, the shortfall of, man, I can't read. I got to change my color scheme here because I'm having trouble reading that. A shortfall of $100,864 in water, and wastewater, the shortfall was $123,465. We then took, as the next slide will show, this is the same results but using May actuals. So essentially, we've got pretty much the same result except in one area. And I got to get my nifty little laser pointer out here. And that is in general fund. General fund, right now we're showing a deficit of $7,605. And the reason that differed from the surplus of $29,000 that we showed at the May meeting is that I failed to pick up a late payment, again, on the legal expense for the Crosstown Trail. So when we add that to the mix, we have a deficit in the general fund. The water and wastewater, they're pretty close to where we were when we presented this chart in May. The one thing that I did add here, which I did not show in May, is the resource conservation, and that stands for resource conservation, R-E-S-C-O-N-S, and I'm sorry, I should have spelled that out. We get so involved in our in acronyms here that I forget the fact that the readers may not necessarily know what R-E-S-C-O-N-S means, but that stands for resource conservation. And then the budget that for 07-08, and this is the one that you were asked to approve this evening. And we have a surplus of $76,000 in general fund, a shortfall of $82,468 in water, and a shortfall of $24,562 in wastewater. And in a moment, on the next couple of slides, I'll explain what some of these differences are and how we got to these numbers. And then again, in our resource conservation, and again, I apologize, I've got R-E-S-C-O-N-S down here. And the reason I wanted to show a resource, or that Tammy and I wanted to include resource conservation on...
Through our urban water management plan.
So because of that, we decided to include in our information a resource conservation as a viable activity. And as I'm looking at this chart, obviously I carried the green all the way through, and I guess considering my profession, I happen to like green, so I guess considering my profession, it's only natural that I would like green. I was getting a little tired of the red, so I changed the colors. I just had a whimsical moment there, I guess, but...
Patrick, you're getting wild and crazy, aren't you?
Patrick, can you explain one more time why you broke resource conservation out separately?
Broke it out separately.
What's the rationale?
Because under the best water management practices, we need to show at least a half-time person as being involved in that activity. And since it's now Corey Ryan and it was Joyce Hannum, and that also gets involved, and we were talking about the wait list before, and also the retrofit and those activities all related to conserving our resources up here in Cambria. So for that reason, we put it out as a separate activity.
Okay, what's the source of revenue that you use to fund that?
The source of revenue, and that's coming up on an up-and-coming slide, is number one, the remodel fees, and a retrofit in lieu fee revenue. And granted, there isn't a whole lot of that, but that's the two primary sources. And if there's a shortfall in that, then it falls into reserves.
Reserves from water or wastewater or both?
General fund.
Okay.
Well, actually, yeah. True.
Okay. You know, it typically covers itself with the fees that are collected for remodels and or the retrofit in lieu fees.
Okay.
So some of the salient points in salary and benefits in 06-07, workers' comp, we've got an estimated decrease of 14.0%, and that percentage may look huge. It equates to about $26,000, and since we have experienced such a nice drop in our workers' comp rates over the last couple of years, we are continuing to see a drop, but obviously the magnitude of that decrease isn't as big as it was when the rates were a lot higher. The other health insurance, I estimated an increase of 9.5%, decrease of 1.5%. It's probably comparable to owning Cisco stock in the early 2000s when it was way over 100 and whatever price per share. Now it's dropped down to 21 or 22.
You so too,
goes,
huh?
So it goes up to 21, and everyone says, ooh, look at that fantastic increase. Well, they forget about the fact that it was up so high. The same kind of rationale, yeah, me too, you're right, kind of applies here. Even though it's a decrease, this is on top of 2 years of some pretty stiff and steep increases. But still, it's a decrease, so that we like to see. The labor negotiations are still in progress. I've got a placeholder in there of 2% along with the roll-up costs. Where that is going to go, that is still up for negotiation, but I felt we needed to put something in there just to see how things were going to look, so we did. The district engineer is charged off to infrastructure projects. And the district council, I've allocated, and I kind of checked with Art, and this was kind of roughly his percentage, also 60% of his time now will be charged to infrastructure projects.
Never looked at Bob and considered him an infrastructure project, but...
Oh, he is.
I thought he was more completed, you know.
He's a piece of work.
Very good.
While
you're on the subject here, Patrick, what about the general manager's salary?
No. And for two reasons. One is, number one, they are operational, and whether we have a project or not, we still have to pay their salaries and benefits. If we don't have a project, I mean, you know, Bob's probably without a job. And when we get a little bit further on, I am charging off some of our wastewater labor to the project, but that is because it's hands-on. They're actually laying the concrete, pulling the
for the screw press.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I really do have difficulty charging off Tammy and Brian Bode to infrastructure projects for the simple reason that they're really, in my opinion, managers and part of the district management staff.
Let me make a suggestion. In the event that we're going to finance or not finance,
we truly are going to be doing that with Black and Veatch. I mean, we're
okay.
committed now to hearing you from before and trying to do what we can now. But I am committing to you that we will do that when we know we have sound methodology and maybe even the processes by which we can follow.
Okay.
Try to keep it wild and crazy like you did before. Don't let him just
sway me, huh? Under facilities management, we included, and I apologize here, I call it East West Ranch. Obviously, I did this slide prior to, it's now called the Fiscalini Preserve, so I apologize on that. But we've got $25,000 in here for clearing the deeded lots to the district. We're going to lose the ranch house rental income of $16,200, which is a budget impact for the facilities management department. We've got a projected increase in user fee income or users of the vets hall of $30,000. The final Chevron donation payment will come in 06-07, and that's $300,000, and that's the last payment we will get from Chevron.
When is that coming?
That'll come about in, I billed them when do I bill? I billed them in November, and we should get that around December. The fire department? That's pretty cool, huh?
But, Patrick, we don't want the fire truck burning. That's not a good thing.
Well, I have to confess.
It would be very, very embarrassing, I think, yeah, that's, for the chief. And
not with there. Bob in the room. If he's out of the room, okay, but you don't want to embarrass him.
I have to confess, when I did this at home, the truck bad. Came in the right way. Here it came in backwards, and I thought, man, it got that thing in backwards in a nanosecond. Man, this guy's good.
It's like the utilities manager having a plugged-up toilet.
In the fire department's operating budget, we got a required fire station sprinkler test of $7,000.
Holy smart.
We have the MIMS system emergency at the operations center of $8,500 put into their operating budget. 1,800 feet of new 10-inch hose for $1,800. We've got new personal protective gear and washer extractor. Now, this is being paid for with grant funds, or they're working on the grant to get the grant funds to pay for that. And, of course, then we have the fire engine annual lease payment. Now, this is our historical election cost, and you were talking about $11,000 earlier on the potential ballot measure. So I may have to adjust something here because historically, for the November election, the district, the county charged us around $4,000.
The $11,000 figure.
It says set forth in the staff report to put a ballot measure on, the county charges us per registered voter, and the estimated cost was $11,000.
So I don't know. Historically, we paid around $4,000 when it was all lumped in, depending upon if it had a presidential election, a state senator election, because of the fact that the costs were all prorated out.
Let me talk to Julie. Maybe I can get it wholesale.
Cool. And in parks and recreation, we've got the Crosstown Trail revegetation monitoring. That's $7,500, and this was part of the funding requirement for the federal funding that we got. We have to maintain, and I think either this year or next year, I believe, might be the last year that we have to deal with this. I projected a decrease in the legal expense in 06-07 of $30,000, and I sincerely hope we meet that. This is the expense that we've been incurring lately that has really popped the general fund into the deficit right now. I've got the concerts in the park in here at 5,000. On the enterprise funds, some of the impact items.
The money we're getting from the county for the EIR, I didn't see that anywhere in here.
You're right.
So I don't know what the...
You're talking about the development plan? That's an infrastructure. That has nothing to do with operating expense.
I see. So we get it and it goes out, but it doesn't...
Exactly. Since the funding source of that is the public facilities fee, mm-hmm. there's a tag to that that it must be used for construction or the acquisition of property. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it's pretty clear that that can't be used for operational expense. Now, there is one possibility, and this did happen with our grant on the Bluff Trail. We underran that budget in large part due to Connie and Ben Bohr.
Yeah.
Connie went back and was able to allow them to pick...
It's a non-operation, so thank
when
you
we
for
get
explaining
into
that.
Into the CIP budget, mm-hmm. it will be included in the CIP budget.
It's mostly because they're restricted funds, and we don't want them to get commingled in the operations funds, just for fear that they might be considered as operations funds, and it's pretty strict with the county agreement that we can't use them for such.
Yeah, well, we want to use it for what it was intended to be used for.
In the water department, some of the impact items, we've got the 5.4 rate adjustment. I'm estimating that will increase revenue by about $85,000. We've got the long-term financial management plan, which is Black and Veatch, and the cost proportioned out to the water department is $48,700. In the wastewater department, again, the 5.4 rate adjustment will generate an additional $88,000 in projected in revenue. I've got a projected decrease in the operation of the biosolid screw press of $80,000, and I've got an estimated timeline on this, and Brian and I kind of talked about this, of September 1. Now, I do know that they also have a pretty heavy stockpile of stuff that they have to get rid of, so I hope I'm not optimistic.
What does it mean by stuff? It's all right.
Stuff. So I've got the estimated cost, the operation in here. It's getting late, huh? Of September 1. And this is the one, this is kind of referencing what Director Sanders asked earlier. I'm estimating for the next 10 pay periods and going on the timeline that screw press would be operational on September 1, I'm estimating that the wastewater department personnel will spend, including benefits, $70,795 that we are going to charge to the project. And the reason for that is that the staff in the department are actually working on installing that screw press. They're actually laying the concrete, laying the conduit, and doing all that sort of stuff. So it's physical labor that they're doing, and we don't have to go out and hire an outside consultant or outside service to do it. So that's the rationale for doing it. I need to emphasize this is part-time. Once that screw press is operable, then, of course, they're
on the biosolids dewatering project. So that number, if you would take the $24,000 estimated shortfall in wastewater, if you added that, it'd be about $94,000 or close to $100,000 deficit when it's brought back into the wastewater department.
The long-term financial management plan, the cost to be prorated out to the wastewater department, again, this is Black and Veatch, and that's $48,700. And I'm projecting that they will fill their, as Tammy mentioned earlier about the vacant position, they have had a vacancy over there, so I'm projecting that will be filled at a cost of $68,000, including benefits. And the next thing I wanted to show, and these are just kind of informational, and this is for the 06-07, the revenue sources of the district, and that revenue total, $6.4 million, that's what we're asking you to approve this evening. What I really wanted to display here are two things. One are service fees, which is a pretty healthy chunk of our revenue. Property tax, where is property? Right there. That's also a pretty healthy chunk. Fire benefit, which is 5.8%. And then Director Sanders, you asked about the source of revenue for the resource conservation. It's remodel fees, and actually a portion of that, this includes assignment revenue as well as retrofit and lieu fee revenue. So the assignment revenue is for a water department, that, and I should have broken this out, that is for the resource conservation department.
Patrick, on interest income, given that the LAIF interest rate has been going up, do you think that's a conservative number? $125,600.
That's extremely conservative, and I might be a little light here. And when I kind of estimate this, I take the very optimistic view. Remember in my manager's report, I outlined the projects that we have. I take the optimistic view that that's all going to be spent within the next quarter. And I'm also taking the view that we will have refunded the state the $1.5 million in the first quarter. You know, I'm being conservative. And yes, that I might be a little bit light with that, but you know, until we get a finer timeline, particularly on where Pine Knoll's tank and the 30% design on diesel, I guess I just wanted to be as conservative as I could.
Sure.
But your point is very well taken, Director Sanders. I am a little hesitant on that for two reasons. One is, as we all know, the prices of homes is starting to soften. And home sales are also starting to soften, and that has an impact on this number. The county is kind of suggesting I use this number. We'll have to just see how that plays out. Historically, the last 2 years, we did very well with our increase in our property tax, but that's because property values were really going up, and there were a lot of sales. So a lot of homes that were sold were outside the Prop 218. So I am estimating a 7% increase. I think I'm ballparkish with this, but it's a number that we do need to watch. And what I really wanted to show here is obviously the bulk of it goes to the fire department, 76% of it. Park or facilities and property management gets a chunk. Admin gets a chunk. Parks and open space gets a chunk. And this is the reserves, that's $76,652 that we're projecting to be a surplus.
Patrick, is the fire assessment, fire department assessment included in this number?
No, it is not. That's a source of revenue for the fire department. This is the amount of property tax over and above the fire benefit assessment that the fire department needs to balance their budget.
So for somebody viewing this on television, they're not to assume that the fire department's budget is $1,250,000.
That is correct. Okay. That is correct. You're absolutely right. This is the operating expense for 06-07 by category. And the reason I've got this up here is I wanted to show two things. One is if you labor expense, which is over 50% of our budget, debt service, which is another chunk of 9.6%. So between debt service and our labor expense, you've got almost two-thirds of our budget. You add in utilities, and so what I'm really trying to show here is there isn't a whole lot of discretionary spending in our operation budget. Now, one thing I did do here, I included in here, remember earlier I had said I had pulled $70,000 out of the wastewater department. I added it back in for purposes of this slide, just because at some point that $70,000 is actually going to be back into labor expense. This is not the expenditure of the previous slide, so obviously I've got in wastewater, I've included that $70,795. This, I also, where is admin in here? Right here. This excludes the allocated overhead of admin to these departments. So what I'm trying to basically show here in the operating expense by department is their actual operating expense, excluding allocated overhead, just to get a sense of what their operating costs truly are. When we actually do the budget, this number here gets allocated out to each and every one of these departments based upon an allocation formula. And that is also something that Black and Veatch is going to help us look at, because we obviously do have a methodology of doing it. It's about as precise as we can get it, but there's always room for improvement. And the last slide that I have is our reserve situation. Right now, in my manager's report, I said we had $9.1 million, which is what we have right now as of May 6th. At June of 2004, we had $12.9 million. This is when the Chevron money came in. These numbers here, the 10.8, the 10.4, and the 10.2, are these legible? I have a feeling I should make this font a little bit bigger the next go around, huh? Colors are cool, aren't they?
That's the important thing.
These 3 years right here included roughly $2.8 million of the waitlist deposits, which we dispersed in January of 2004. So this, you can tell there is a downward trend in our reserve balance. And this 9.1, as it dropped from 12.9, which dropped from 10.9 at the end of last year, this is cash. This really has no impact, no matter how we allocate our costs, no matter who we charge, no matter, we could charge 100% of admin to the Pine Knolls tank. It doesn't dispute the fact that it's cash out the door. So I really, that's what the point I wanted to make with this, is that our reserves are dropping. And I guess the obvious question is, where have they gone? And there's a number of projects. For example, Crosstown Trail, we used about almost $600,000 in general.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Any questions for Patrick at this point?
May I make a motion?
No, I have one public comment. Jerry?
Get out of here so Jerry McKinnon can get up here.
Yeah. I just wanted to wake him up, that was all.
Jerry McKinnon, somebody said shoot for the moon, and if I miss, I'll be among the stars. So here we go. My concern as a taxpayer in the community is property taxes, then the cap that I'm wearing, this Veterans Memorial Building. And I stress the word memorial. When I look at the documents, I do not see the word Veterans Memorial Building mentioned anywhere. When I look at the facilities and properties, I see a lot of dramatic figures. For instance, property taxes allotted to the building were cut by $149.77. The facility maintenance was cut, $4,195. Professional services was increased by $18,880. I'm concerned about how the money is being spent in facilities and properties, which includes the Veterans Memorial Building.
If I can make a clarification of professional services, the final payment from Chevron at $300,000, whenever that payment is made,
Your mic, Patrick.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The reason that professional services
still not on.
Is where it is, I'm sorry, thanks.
He's just turning it
up. Is where it is we owe Cotchett, Petrie, Simon, and
Garfunkel.
Yeah, whatever that San Francisco law firm is, they take 19% of it, so we're getting $300,000, so that's the reason for that increase.
Okay. There's an explanation for everything, and I'm asking questions to get some explanations.
Sure.
So my concern is the Veterans Memorial Building, and I am concerned that the that the building is not being maintained at the present time for probably a variety of reasons. Okay, now that takes care of the Veterans Memorial Building, not the property taxes.
Can I interrupt you for just a second?
Certainly.
Jerry? Keep in mind, going back a couple of meetings, the decision was made to kind of have a placeholder budget here, pending the results of the Black and Veatch study. So what you see is something that is intended to kind of tide us over until the Black and Veatch study is done, and then we can get a better handle on our revenue sources and maybe revisit some of these issues.
Okay, all right. But that doesn't explain to me about the property taxes. For instance, in 05-06, the administration used $25,722 in property taxes. In 06-07, they are budgeting $135,147. That's an increase of $109,426. The facilities in 05-06 was $203,764. This year, property taxes, $59,687, which is a cut of $149,077. The fire department. In 05-06, $1,138,610. 06-07, it's been budgeted to $1,251,498, or an increase of $112,838. Parks and open space, 05-06, was budgeted for $167,926. 06-07, it's budgeted for $112,423.
Jerry.
Yes, sir.
For brevity, why don't you get to the point that you're trying to make?
Well, I'm getting to the point
in the development
of the budget, there are a lot of misbalances from last year that I don't hear an explanation for. I am a taxpayer. Mm-hmm. I do pay my taxes, right. And I want to know how the money is being spent and the rationale all over all of these differences. I think we're entitled to that.
Jerry, just an example, when you were reading the...
My explanation is here that professional services is being increased. When I look at the total operating costs for 05-06 of $170,966, and 06-07 is $185,195. And so you take out that increase, and there's just not any money going into protecting our facilities. That's my concern. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I make a motion?
Yes, sir. Any more discussion before? Okay.
I'd like to adopt Resolution 33-2006, adopting the operating budget for fiscal year 2006/2007.
But second, but again, it's with the proviso that when the Black and Veatch study is done, we'll look at the whole thing again.
Yeah, we'll probably be back at mid-year again.
New recommendations.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. All those in favor signify by aye.
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 Opposed? So carried. I have one public comment, Richard Hawley.
Well, while Rick's walking to the podium, may I introduce in the back of the room Merle Clift? Are you still here, Merle?
Yeah.
He is your organizing chairperson for the Citizens Committee for the Emergency Medical Services. They have their first meeting next week, and I think he is sat back there patiently observing this evening, and I wanted to make sure that he was identified.
We met him
tonight.
Last time.
Was he there? Well,
yeah.
Good. You got two introductions.
Yeah. Richard.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard Hawley. Two things, and I'll try to be brief. One is about a water meter.
Don't try B.
Okay. You're cutting into my time, Funky Baloo. One is about a water meter that was given to the district council with the caveat that he build a house with it to live here. But I've been told that it's now attached to a lot and for sale, and I wonder if that's a breach of his contract. The other issue is the $100,000 that the district voted to give the community center. And I just want to point out one thing. It's a terrible situation, and I feel badly about it, and especially to the community center. But I want to point out that Mr. Funky Blue asked to be on an oversight committee.
Despite your assertion that there was no oversight, in fact, there was. Mm-hmm. They presented bills. Those bills were looked at by the finance officer, and they were paid after he approved them.
But no oversight was done on how they managed their money.
And well, the oversight was done on how they spent the CCSD's money. Mm-hmm. How they spend their own money is their business.
Well, allocating public funds to something like that deserves a little more than just paying the bills as they come in, and that's my point.
Well, we just didn't pay the bills as they come in. The bills were looked at, the questions were asked, then the checks were issued. Mm-hmm. So the assertion that we gave them money is wrong, and the assertion that there was no oversight is wrong.
Interesting spin, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, and in fact, I want to stress that they were for the fundraising activities outlined in the MOU, and they were reviewed by Patrick Bradley and or myself whenever the invoices came through. The first question that he asked with regard to the district council's meter, that was reviewed by outside council without our district council being involved, and everything is on the up and up with regard to what is transpiring at this time.
Thank you. And I think it bears repeating. We've discussed this publicly once before. We didn't give the district council a meter. The way the contract is set up with the district council, he is earning the meter. And if he leaves employment here before the 40 months over which he has to amortize the cost of that meter, if he leaves before that 40 months is up, he has to pay us on a prorated scale. It's part of his salary. We didn't give it to him.
And I'd like to make a comment as well, is that, for reasons whatever, the board decided to close the community center. But if I've taken careful look at their 05-06 financial statements, and the first thing you'll notice, they've reduced their indebtedness by a third. They had a budget of $200,000, which they generated from other sources than ours. They served children, as many as 40 children a day in the teen centers, not always that many, but 20, 30. They served many, the tot time, the many, many adults have had services there. So what we've ended up with a year of, they've generated more funds through fundraising than they ever did. They reduced their debt.
Involved in that, so I just want to make that point of clarification so as to avoid any more calls to the general manager's office, inferring that you guys had any involvement in that whatsoever.
Yeah. No further business. We will adjourn to closed session.